Welcome to Social Media Church Podcast. I'm Neil Smith and joined by our co-host, Nick Runyon. Nick, thanks for joining the podcast today.
Of course.
And we are talking about F8 because F8 just happened. F8 is the mecca hub of social media right now. It's basically like what the old Steve Jobs WWDC events where Facebook announces their new stuff, exciting news. And so your colleague and our friend Chad did something very cool that we're going to be sharing on today's podcast. You want to talk about what was done and what we're going to be sharing today?
Yeah, faithful regular listeners of the Social Media Church podcast will recognize the name Chad Huggins. Yes. No, Chad's awesome. He's our marketing and content manager here at CV Outreach. And man, this guy comes up with great ideas. And a couple weeks ago, he was like, hey, we're going to do a Facebook Live following Zuckerberg's keynote address at F8. And since we all applied to go to F8 and got rejected, despite my best efforts of calling people that I know out there saying, hey, get me in. But he was like, we're going to watch the keynote, and then we're going to do like a news desk kind of bring on different guests to get their reactions. I'm like, oh, that's cool. Let's do it. That sounds like a great idea. So he's like, wow, we'll get Mills on and, you know, a bunch of other people that you'll hear. And then he's like, and I think we're going to do it for like 3 hours. Said, okay, let's do it. You know? So it was just this long, great conversation with different experts that have, you know, frequented this podcast before, kind of responding to what Zuckerberg had to say. So if you missed the F8 keynote address, I'm sure you can Google it and find it, or you can just listen to this great conversation that's about to come up and you'll be completely up to speed, as well as what Kenny thinks about Mark's Zuckerberg's presentations.
Highlight for me. So. Yes. So look forward to Kenny's thoughts that in his opinions are always very bold and strong, and strong being the key word. So great conversation. Chad, thanks for leading the way in this conversation. So here is the conversation. What, just a moment. Wait,
one thing, little listening tip. It's a big, long conversation, but about every half hour, we bring on new guests. So when you get to the part with me and Nils kind of droning on and on and you're getting tired of it, just like hit that little skip button and go forward. Just feel free to bounce around the podcast and see who's in there if you don't have time to just sit and consume.
And the topics change. So it goes from PR, VR, bots. I mean, so many different topics. Groups, a lot around groups, a lot around advertising, a little bit of everything, very practical for church leaders. So I think you want to listen to the whole thing. Probably want to chop it up, listen to it over time. But we wanted to share the whole conversation with you on this podcast. So here it is, the F8 debrief. All right. Welcome, Facebook. We are live right now. My name is Chad Huggins. I'm with CV Outreach, and I'm in a little Facebook Messenger group right now with a bunch of Facebook nerds. We just watched Facebook, a bunch of people at Facebook, but Mark Zuckerberg right off the bat give a big update at his annual keynote at the F8 conference. And we're going to be coming to you live. Got a bunch of smart people that are going to talk about Facebook, what the future of Facebook is for ministries and churches. And I'm going to jump right in and start introducing you to some of our distinguished panel here. So I'll do it one at a time. And everybody wish me luck as I'm a one-man control booth here for the next couple of hours. But first, I'm going to bring in Justin Dean. Justin, how's it going, man?
Hey, Chad. How you doing?
Good. We're going to nerd out about Facebook on Facebook, broadcasting from Facebook.
Isn't that amazing? I mean, the technology these days is crazy. I can't believe guys like you and I can figure this out, though.
All right. Real quick, well, and then I'll bring everybody else in. Scale of 1 to 10, what did you think about all the big updates from everybody we just watched?
You know, like a six or seven, like some really cool stuff, stuff that I thought, like, man, we should have had this already, or it's not a huge update. A lot of focus on privacy, obviously, with everything that's going on. So that stuff's important, but it's not like an Apple keynote where you're just blown away.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, cool. I'm going to bring, because this, and so everybody watching, this is going to be wild and crazy. We're going to have four people on here at once. So I'm going to bring another person in here. Holly Hall Tate is going to join us in just a second. Hello.
Hey.
Welcome to the broadcast.
This is cool. With Oculus yet? Are we in VR?
Oh, man. That'd be cool. Yeah.
Virtual reality?
That's definitely one thing to talk about. They made a big announcement. Oculus Go is shipping today. And we're going to talk about that. Holly, what did you think, first impressions of the whole deal from everybody?
Yeah, I mean, I am someone who always loves seeing improvements, and I think that Facebook proved that they are trying to innovate and improve. I don't know that there was anything like super earth-shattering for me, but yeah, I would agree with Justin, probably like a 7-ish, or some really good improvements to features that we already love that I think marketers can utilize, but nothing quite earth-shattering, I would say.
Okay. Nothing like the type with your mind thing from last year.
That was pretty cool, yeah.
Okay. We got somebody in the waiting room here. I can't tell if this is RoboCop or who is this, but let's bring him in. I know he's ready to talk about Facebook. Kenny Jeong, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What's on your face, man?
Dude, I've got retro gear on today. I feel like I'm one of the early gear.
Nerd.
All right.
I've got some Snapchat spectacles around here somewhere.
It's like the one day that I feel like I can wear this in public again.
All right. Now we can begin. Kenny is here. You as well. What were your first impressions overall of all the updates we just heard?
I think that it was a master PR event for Facebook. I think Mark has got that silent side shrug chuckle down pat. And we need to send over some paratroopers and media training, all their awkward speakers on stage. But other than that, yeah, it was okay.
Well, let me lay this out for everybody. If you didn't watch this, you can go back and rewatch. All the F8 stuff will be available for anybody to watch. But basically, Mark Zuckerberg walked in there and started with, "It's been a little bit hard to be a developer lately," sort of nodding to his, you know, being laid out over the coals in front of Congress, and then ended with, "We're gonna keep building this big rah-rah moment," and he's got a crowd full of developers. Do you think he successfully rode back into Camelot cheering on the troops after surviving everything he's been through in the last couple weeks?
I think he did. I think, you know, the cheers were heartfelt for him, and I think that people are going to shrug off what's happened in the last few weeks. I think they already have. You know, people were in a big panic. Everyone's leaving Facebook. But that's just not true. I mean, even kids that might be using other apps still have active Facebook accounts. You can tag any millennial and they'll reply within seconds, even if they don't use the app every day. So it's not going anywhere. It's going to continue to grow. And I think that they didn't do anything really wrong. You know, like there's not anything you can point to that, man, they did this. They're evil. They just weren't ahead of the game quick enough, and I think he recovered from that pretty well today. Like Kenny said, this was a great PR gig for them today.
For sure. Do you agree with that, Holly? You think that it was a good plus for them?
Yeah, I think one of the things that they really did well was show the diversification of their products. You know, I think there's a lot of people out there that, I mean, those of us that are marketing or developer nerds, I think we know that Facebook owns all of these other, you know, or acquired all these other companies. But a lot of people might not know that. And so for them to see like, oh, yeah, Facebook owns WhatsApp and Oculus and, you know, Messenger is a separate product from Facebook. And I think they did a really good job of showing the diversification of the tools that they bring to the table to kind of divert away from just, you know, ads. I don't even know that they even talked about, like, you know, all of the ad tools or anything like that, which is what the Cambridge Analytica thing was all over. It was more like, hey, look at all of these other tools that we have that you can use in your everyday life, which I thought was smart.
So if I'm using email and WhatsApp, does that, can they see that? Is that cross post to Facebook Messenger?
Who knows? I want to go. I wish they had a quote from that senator who was like, "Have you seen this post?"
Yeah.
Specific post. Okay, let's get the Kenny. Let's get the boring stuff out of the way. This whole keeping people safe thing. Right off the bat, he talked about election integrity, data privacy, fake news, and then introduced this clear history tool they're building. What were your impressions? What does that make you think about this clear history thing? And I don't know if you spell that out for people, what that means.
Yeah, I think it's completely hype. They're behind the ball. They should have been doing all this stuff from day one. And they're just making it, you know, sound like it's a brand new product feature that they're launching. That's cool new technology. And, it's incredible to me, even just the way they framed it, right? That elections was part of it, fake news, data privacy. And then they glossed over the fact that here in North America, we think about just that it affects US only. And he actually, had a glimpse. He mentioned that there's all these major elections going on around the world. And I think that it's just one of these things that people just don't get how much influence Facebook and technology today has over our lives. And then what I love, and I'll just pivot, I'll say this one thing, I'll let you guys talk, is I love how they are able to frame the conversation to control it. The thing that should have been added to that list is relationships, right? They are actually talking about well-being research and the interactions, passive, even the dating stuff. That is probably much more impactful in culture and society than some of this other stuff like fake news and data privacy.
Yeah, I will. People should know, if nobody's is familiar with F8, it's actually a two-day event. So they're still talking right now, and I bet at some point somebody's going to dig into all the sort of psychological research they're able to do. But Holly, did you check to see if your information was hacked through the Cambridge Analytica thing?
I didn't. Is that bad? I probably should. But to that point,
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I love what Mark said, where he said, clearing your data history on Facebook will actually create maybe a subpar user experience, at least in the beginning. And I think that's an important thing that a lot of people don't realize, that, you know, organizations having data on us isn't necessarily, it's not inherently bad or negative. It's what they do with that data that's bad, which is the whole debacle that we're in right now. But I love that he said that because, you know, honestly, to me, it wasn't as big of a deal, probably because I'm a marketer and I think that data can be really useful. And I think that seeing useful ads on my Facebook, it actually makes my Facebook experience better. So I like that he made that point, and I love that they're giving people the option to clear their history if that's something that they want, but not making it an automatic across the board. We're clearing everyone's history now. So I thought that was a really smart way to approach the situation.
Yeah, I'll be honest. My first thought with the clearing history thing, because I run a lot of Facebook ads, I was like, what's this going to do to my retargeting or my lookalike audiences and stuff like that, which I'm sure later on in one of these breakout sessions, the ads VPs are really going to explain what that means for people. But all right, I want to get to some of the fun stuff because we've been talking about Facebook security, I feel like, for a long time. I'm tired of hearing about it on NPR, but I want to jump into right off the bat. This is the weirdest one, and I did not see this coming. And we'll see how long we can string this along and frame it up for churches. But Facebook is getting into the dating game. Justin, what do you think about that?
I think it's a brilliant approach to it. Like the way that it's connected through groups and events and things like that, it seems like they at least had a lot of input or did a lot of research to see that, hey, that this is the way that people are actually really connecting in the real world when they're dating. And it's something that all the other competitors, Tinder, Match, you know, whatever else is out there, they can't do that because they don't have the Facebook connection really, to build upon everyone's profile, connect to events and things like that. So it's really a great evolution with the way that groups and events and now this dating app on top of it. I really like how they've done it. I think it's going to probably crush those other companies in the same way that they've crushed Snapchat.
Kids, churches, this Facebook dating interface, or can they use it? We had some ideas going in the group, but I'm just curious for people watching at home, like, what is this? Is this something to ignore, or can churches use this?
I think we could build groups around it, right? Like, the way that we can connect into it is by creating a singles group for your church, so that when people in your church are using the dating app, right, supposedly the way it'll work is if two people from your church are using it, your singles group will pop up. You know, you could have it by your county or city or mm-hmm. related to two people who go to your church. I think that that is mind-boggling, like churches to jump on that in a second.
Yeah, I don't think it's just for single-focused events. And I think, you know, in the chat we're talking about it when we were having our own watch party, that this is a great time to actually push the church to start to do events for and with the community, out there in the community, that are not just about let's just sit around and nerd out about the Bible, but talk about community, talk about cultural events. Andy Crouch, right, is really famous for saying, look, we can't just condemn culture. We can't criticize culture. The only way to change culture is to create culture. And let's bring the church back to the center of the public square and celebrate that and use that as a vehicle to let people from the community come in. And, you know, if the dating stuff happens, it happens. But I think that's just something that is, for me, a huge, huge win if we're talking about how do we influence church leaders to change their programming.
Definitely. I'm really excited about the potential there. I just hope, and he alluded to this, but I hope that they can really maintain quality. I hear a lot of, you know, I'm married, but I am really passionate about helping the church support singles. I think the church is not doing a good job really of it right now, of allowing singles to really meet each other and making it easy to do that. So I think that this definitely opens an opportunity for churches to use technology to make those connections. To me, I kind of viewed it as like the bridge of online to offline, rather than, you know, like the dating apps, trying to push people to stay within the app as long as possible, right? To have those conversations and hopefully somebody asks you to coffee. mm-hmm. I like that it's showing you, hey, here's where you can meet these people, like tomorrow at a, you know, an event that is a football watching party or something that you have in common with them. Because I know from a lot of my single friends desire to meet, you know, other Christian singles in person, in real life. And so I think that's cool that Facebook is trying to be that bridge. But I think quality is going to be the key. If people are getting, you know, creepy messages from people, it's going to immediately turn them off, which is why so many people are going away from the you know, I want to say traditional. That's so funny that I'm referring to the traditional dating apps because they're still relatively new. I kind of think of like the jobs feature in the marketplace. In my opinion, when I get those alerts, I'm like, oh, this is disgusting. Like the marketplace is all this weird stuff people are selling. I don't know. So as long as we can keep quality and make it a really premium experience and respectful experience, I think there's a lot of potential there.
Holly, one third of Americans are using the marketplace, the Facebook marketplace. Maybe it's the one third of Americans that are getting married.
It's the same one third.
Yeah, it's the same. It's Kenny and his cul-de-sac in New Jersey.
Overall, the dating app seemed very non-skeezy. Like it seemed like they put a lot of thought into making it safe. But
I don't know how they can get rid of the creeps though. Like if anyone can jump on it and start using it, I don't know. But
they're all on Twitter. They're not on Facebook.
Yeah, that's true.
All right, let's get in. Let's keep it moving. What did y'all think about Watch Party? They're releasing it slowly, but I've been wanting to do one for a while, and I finally did one today for this F8 thing, and I thought it was really cool. It's very sort of simple, but what do y'all think about Watch Party? And Justin, can you explain what Watch Party is, I guess?
Sure. So the idea is you can watch a video, whether live or recorded, I believe, because I've had it for a couple months now. I've been playing around with it in some of our groups, and you can watch a video with friends. So you can say, okay, you know, today at 3 we're gonna watch this video, and you can join in and watch it together, and you can chat with each other. They did introduce some new features today, it looks like, to where you can a host can narrate the video and have their little chat bubble up. I thought that looked super cool. I would use that. We would use that in some of our groups for churches, to where we're watching a keynote or video, and I can kind of add commentary to it while people watch.
Like VH1 pop-up videos.
Yeah, it had like a VH1 pop-up thing for anybody who remembers that. but I think there's definitely some great use cases there for sure. But I don't know. Part of it, I've been using it for a while, and it's kind of gimmicky so far. Like, it's fun and it's new, but so far it's just been like, well, I don't know. There's not much depth to the conversation there. It's still just quick comments. You can't really have full on, conversations in, comments under a video. So I don't know, but I think, in a group watching a video together, there's definitely value in that.
I was actually surprised that they didn't integrate gaming, right? My 13-year-old is playing Fortnite and Xbox 360, connected with other friends with a headset. It's kind of like a watch party, but actually I think even better technology, because it's real audio from the microphone, et cetera. And I'm surprised that gaming did not come in this year, in 2018.
Yeah, that is. I'm sure we'll talk about it later, but yeah, go ahead, Holly.
Yeah, I was going to say, just some ideas for churches as far as the watch party goes. It could be really interesting to see churches, a live streaming with churches is really big right now, live streaming the service. But what if they replayed the sermon, later on in the week? Or what if they started being more creative about, the youth sermons from youth group, or the children's ministry skit from that week? I don't know. There could be some really interesting watch parties with church content, whether it's recycling content or new content. I'm curious out there, all you church marketers that are watching, who have some ideas as to how your church might be able to experiment with the watch party feature.
Yeah, I think it's super prime for like that director's commentary type experience. And yeah, if you got a pastor that's game, I feel like that would be a really cool thing to have an extra, question and answer period after the sermon. And Jordan, I'll throw up a comment here. This is on the CV Outreach page, but Online Alpha, I had that exact thought when I was watching. I was like, man, if you could do those sort of group video, small group sessions, but do them in a watch party, that'd be really cool.
Yeah.
Dude, I don't want to miss, in my experience of being a church online pastor, it is distance, right? They said they're defying distance. And that's one of the key things, is community is built not by proximity and geographic location. I personally think the community and relationships are built with shared experiences. And so if it means that your church is watching, football on Sundays, basketball on Mondays, and you're just watching it together, and it's almost like you have a hangout room and everyone can defy distance during the week and yet just have community together, watch together, you'll have those small micro interactions that actually help form relationships. And that's the stuff that I think is really exciting, that you're not, again, it doesn't need to be like holy huddles all the time. It just needs to be community that's intentional, that has shared affinities. And I think that's one of the things that hopefully we'll see explore and flourish over the next year or two.
I would totally watch like a men's event or something with my community group. Something that they replay that way. Like, I would totally do that online. Any kind of shared connection between me and another group watching a church-related video, that's brilliant.
Okay. I want to get into the news feed, because after all of the, this controversial stuff with Facebook, they've publicly said that they're optimizing the algorithm for meaningful social interactions, and even said that they expect people's time spent in the news feed to go down. Today, they're talking about what types of content they're prioritizing. It's friends first, and then publishers that are, and this is their words, that are trusted, informative, local, and inspiring conversations. Who do y'all know that are local publishers that are informative and trusted and inspiring conversations? Is that what you thought? My immediate thought was like, that sounds great for churches. If they can really do that, if they can double down on being a trusted local source and get those conversations going. But
Step up that content though.
Yeah. Y'all concerned about the newsfeed for ages, you know?
I mean, I feel like that has increasingly decreased every year. I mean, I feel like that marketers, if they're investing a ton of time and energy in their specific Facebook page, I think that's the wrong way to invest our energy. But I do think that there's a huge opportunity for churches to become the community hub of their physical community. So Grace Church down in Orlando and a few surrounding suburbs, Kelly is their communications director there. And she is so passionate about this. And she's working really hard to revamp their communication strategy. And so that when you Google family events in Orlando, Florida, she wants her church to come up.
Yeah.
And I think it's brilliant. Because for too long, we've been what Kenny is saying of the holy huddles. Whereas instead, we should be a place where families trust and families want to be a part of because they know that there's going to be awesome events where they can have what Kenny said, shared experiences. And so I think, yeah, Chad, there's a huge opportunity there. I do think that churches have to shift their mindset. Stop making the content about you as a church.
Yes.
You know, hey, come to this, look at us. Instead, say, hey, here are some community events that we're going to be at, and we want to see you there this Saturday. Become that hub of community for your physical community, and I think churches would see their attendance skyrocket from there.
I'm not worried about the news feed at all. Like, pages are now forced to become what they are, right? It should be a billboard for someone who's visiting your page for the first time. It should show some images and videos of things of what it's like at your church, and then no one's going to see that content again once they're inside. Now it's forcing churches to engage in community, engage with people one-on-one in relationship, and actually get to know them through groups and events and all these new things that they're jumping in there. Facebook even said, or Zuckerberg even said, like, they're seeing more and more everything people are doing on Facebook is trying to emulate a real-time, real-person connection in some way. They're grasping at it to get closer and closer. And churches should embrace that in the content they're creating as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, and again, I think this 2018 F8, I think, is this call. If church Facebook group managers and admins don't hear this, that this specific F8 message was aimed at them particularly, then I think we're all lost. And I think the message is you really need to take your job seriously, in that it's no longer okay to be lazy and just put up graphics and content that is evergreen and nothing that actually like pushes actual engagement, right? It's the old style of the ABC church, right? It's all about attraction, get everyone to our building, and then it's all about cashola, right? And that's the model that's completely gone. You might say virtual reality is going to bring video into the forefront because it's going to make video mandatory. I've been saying for the last year that video is the new black, and you got to focus on relationships. Groups have to change their dynamic and their purpose. Even like this year, Justin recently, he got me to join a private secret Facebook group that's an affinity group that we actually have to pay to join.
Don't talk about it, Kenny. That's the first rule.
But the whole point is, right, are you making your groups valuable enough that people are willing to pay to be a part of that community? Are you delivering that value that's different than just a bulletin board in a church hallway? And that is the call that I think is ringing loud and clear to church social managers today, right here, right now, you know, May 1st, 2018.
Mm-hmm. For sure. So let's talk about the types of content, because they did throw out some crazy growth charts for stories, and that the stories are going to surpass the way we consume Facebook within the next year, I think. And the bar chart was ridiculous.
Yeah.
And it was news to me, but WhatsApp was the biggest stories platform. But then of course you got Instagram and Facebook. Instagram stories, to me at least, is the main way I think about stories. What do you guys recommend for churches as far as stories go? How do you get started with that if you don't have a video team or you don't have the cool designer or whatever? Is it just dive in and do it? Is that where you start?
I think that's great advice to dive in and do it. Yeah, I think with anything, of social media, you should dive in and do it. It might suck at first, but then you get better and better and better. If you're waiting around for you to, you know, have the budget committee approve cameras and a video team, you'll never get online. And by then that, you know, you'll be on to the next thing. So I think you follow guys like Brady Shirer who are doing excellent on stories and providing tools for churches. Sunday Social now, SundaySocial.tv provides stories, images and things that you can throw up, some templates. I think you guys, CV Outreach does, as well, some of those templated images and things that you can use. So there's ways to make it easier. But yeah, jump on, get your pastor on there to share, hey, I'm going out on stage, or here's something I forgot to say in the sermon, or here's my sermon notes, here's my process. Like, show behind the scenes, document your life. That's what stories is all about. And it's almost that, you know, that's why people loved it when Snapchat started it, is it was raw and authentic and it was fun. You know, we got to see new content from people that wasn't polished Instagram photos and videos.
Sure. Okay, we're coming to the end of this 30-minute segment. And so if anybody's watching this, first of all, if anybody watches this whole thing, please let me know. I'll be very impressed. But we're going to be shuffling people in and out. But before we go, I'm going to solo on each of you, and you can give me your big takeaway from everything. And we didn't even talk about everything yet. So we didn't talk about VR. We didn't talk about any of that stuff. But who, let's see, Holly, do you want to go first?
Yeah.
You ready for your big takeaway? Here you go.
I had a couple, but one of the things that I thought was really helpful for, if anybody's watching this video and they are an international ministry or an international church, the translation part of Facebook Messenger, response, in my experience coaching ministries around the world, response follow-up is the biggest pain point. And so if we can use a tool like Facebook to help auto-translate, you know, interacting with people from around the world, that's going to be awesome.
Cool. All right. Kenny, you ready? You ready for your podium here?
Always, always ready, Chad. Always ready. So there's this one little gem that he said at the very beginning, I think that we cannot miss. And it's the driving force and the direction, the trajectory that Facebook is going, and that we ourselves as communicators in this space really need to understand, is that he said that it is all about designing for people first. He recognized that there's friction in the current ways that we're interacting, and that if we just leave it to the status quo, it's not going to be solved. It's not going to be solved. And so they're saying, as a technology platform, it's up to them responsibly to start to build technologies that gets rid of that friction. But I'm saying the burden is on us, especially in the church. If we ever want to get back into the public square and be central to people's communities, we need to figure out how to design our content, our programs, our communications. So it's people first. People first is the thing.
Very good. All right, Mr. Justin Dean, what were you taking away?
Just it is so sad that, like, Facebook, you know, Zuckerberg went across the nation, visited with churches and things like that. And he said, man, churches are building community better than anyone else. And he took that and said, well, Facebook can do better. And they are, like, they've just leaps and bounds jumped beyond the church now. And it's sad that people are going to hear the phrase people first from Facebook, from Zuckerberg, and not from churches and local churches. So we need to jump in and get in on that. I think that's the big takeaway. Don't get caught up on the VR and the AR and things like that. That's stuff you need to keep tabs on. And I know you guys will talk more about that with guys who are in that space, like Nils Smith. I think it's great, and there's some awesome things coming, but that we're still 5-10 years away from where that's like people look like Kenny and that's normal. So, you know, right now focus on building relationships, because we need to get caught up, you know, on that. Focus on groups, focus on doing people first, not just on Facebook. Your website shouldn't just be, you know, here's service times. It should be an opportunity to say, hey, here's where you can find information in your community on the best parks for families, best things like that. Like, create content that puts people first.
Cool. All right. Kenny's got his some little headset viewer there. So we're doing this in 30-minute segments. We're going to shuffle out some people here. I believe we're going to say bye to Justin. for now. But this is, I should also note, I don't think I said this at the beginning, but we are broadcasting this on multiple Facebook pages at one time. So you could be watching this from a variety of pages, including that church conference, their page, which Justin is founder of. So I'm gonna drop Justin out.
Hey guys, thank you.
And we're gonna add someone whose name just got dropped, Mr. Nils Smith. Nils, welcome to the show.
Hey,
there he is.
Thanks for letting me
in. All right,
big deal to
replace. Yeah, for sure. Well. Nils, we talked about a bunch of stuff, but we have not talked about VR yet. But before we get into that, I gave everybody this chance. What was your initial takeaway? How'd you feel about the overall event?
I would say nothing surprising. You know, I think when you think about Apple and what Steve Jobs used to do is you're always looking for that kind of wow factor. And I don't think there was any wow factor. And I think Kenny nailed it when it was a huge PR focus.
What? Kenny nailed it? Did Nils just say that I said something good?
Kenny's still on. What I meant is I'll come back when Kenny gets off. If you guys could, I don't know if there's a button on Kenny. But Kenny did nail it. And it was a big PR move, which is never fun to watch when you're looking for something new and exciting. But at the end of the day, too, I think the focus on VR, Oculus Go, not surprising. And they announced it actually last year at F8, which is really probably the bummer of it took them a year from announcing it to having it available. It shouldn't take that long. But
Lame.
But it's here. So that is exciting.
Okay, cool. Well, they mentioned one thing. I want to talk about this because I obviously haven't experienced it, but it looks like it would just be ridiculously visceral. There is this pointillism thing where you can get in VR and use old family photos, and they somehow use technology to do this pointillism type abstract view of your house growing up. That sounds pretty crazy.
It's, you know, and they talked about it basically last year too in the AR kit, and what they're able to do now with photos to define depth, and then what that does then in an AR world or a VR world. So it is interesting. I think I think it's kind of not that exciting though. I mean, I think it's kind of like, oh, it's cool you can do that, but how much you might go play with some old photos for 5 minutes, and then I think we're gonna get bored with it. I don't think it's game changing by any means, but it is interesting.
Okay, so we are gonna be talking. DJ Soto is gonna join us here. He is the preacher of the first VR church. If you are not a church that is in virtual reality, you know, full on having service in virtual reality, you and Kenny, like what are you advising the average church to do with the Oculus Go?
I think the next step, the first step is pay attention to it. I mean, I think at the end of the day, it's still way early in the VR game. But I think the mistake that people are making with VR is blowing it off like they blew off social media. That's stupid, you know? And it's all about pornography. The internet's all about pornography. And virtual reality is just all about pornography and gaming. VR is so much more than pornography and gaming. And I don't think we can blow it off as stupid. And so I think the biggest thing a church can do right now is pay attention to it. Don't blow all your money on VR. You're not going to go reach a mass audience right now in VR. But I think pay attention to it. And I do think that there are some affordable ways to get into it slowly and steadily. So I think that's the step to do right now. There's going to be some early adopters that can spend some money and do have some bandwidth, but I don't think everybody needs to go all into VR yet. I'm curious Kenny's perspective though.
Yeah, Kenny, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think we need – so the question you posed I think is a really good one. What do current church practitioners do with this? I don't think the call to action is for every church to hop on and start their own VR church services. I do think church online and that form factor is probably much more accessible today. You're eventually going to need to see something 24 months out, 54 months out to see where VR might fit into your ministry. But you don't need to do it now. The number one thing I think you do need to do, and this is what I'm trying to do with my 11th grader daughter and my 7th grader son is actually go to church online services with them. And same thing, I'm going to go to DJ stuff. I'm waiting for my Oculus. I just ordered my Oculus Amazon Prime, so hopefully it'll be here the next day. I'm sure Nils Money Bucks, he's upgraded for one day shipping, so he'll get it one day before me, so he can just shame me into saying that he was first. But with my kids, what I want to do is I want to bring them to VR Church and show them what it is. And I want to bring them to online church and show them what it is, because that is much more closer to their digitally native culture than it is my generation. And so having an understanding of that, especially when they're going to go off to college, exploring it with the youth in your ministry, I think is something that's fantastic. It's going to win you tons of points as one of the older generations. But it also is going to open up a lot of eyes, because it's not, again, it's going to change the framing of what church really is. And does it really depend on a building, or is it about people and relationships and communities? And DJ, I mean, when he gets on, I think it's going to be fantastic talking to him. So some of the things that he's actually witnessed and seen, and just the craving that we had as individuals, as human beings, right? It reminds me of that Q Talk, right? We were all in Nashville together, the Q Talk with the exorcist from the Roman Catholic Church. And one of the things he ended with, it was a weird but funny talk. But one of the things he said was, human beings are innately craving spiritual experiences. And the youth of today need that. They don't have that in a church as a normalized situation. And so they go out and they're inevitably seeking that in other places. Can VR be one of those places? I think it can be. It might be a fad or a novelty, but start there and let's expose this next generation.
For sure. Okay, I got my producers in my ear here. Kenny, since you referenced The Exorcist at the Q conference, we're going to drop you. And we also have Nick running here waiting in the waiting room. But everybody say thank you to Kenny Jong. And we'll see you around. Let me drop you real quick and add Nick Runyon to the mix. All right, here he is. I am squatting currently in his office, which is really cold. This is Nick Runyon, the director of CV North America. Nick, what were your first impressions, your overall reactions of the whole deal?
I think you guys covered it all pretty well. Kenny didn't have very many nice things to say about Mark's presentation style, though. You know, Facebook has come under fire recently. They've taken a lot of shots. And so obviously this was, you know, it's a publicly traded company. This is an opportunity for the CEO to get out there and say, okay, listen, everybody, everything's fine. We're still the best in the world. And, you know, I think Holly was talking earlier about some of the tools that they highlighted. This is a gigantic ecosystem. And I think that was my biggest takeaway as well. And I, you know, you can look up online and get their roadmap. I think that roadmap is fascinating. And to look at maybe the last 12 months and then just try to think through the next 5 years, what else, you know, what else might be waiting in the wings with Facebook, I think that's always a fun thing to do.
I think that, Holly, what's your opinion? I think that's a good sort of question. Like, what's the sleeper platform right now? Because Facebook's really a whole suite of platforms. Like, what's the sleeper one that nobody's paying attention to that churches maybe should hop on and start exploring a little bit?
Oh, gosh. I mean, I don't know that it's the sleeper platform, but I do – we were kind of talking a little bit about stories a minute ago, and one of the ideas that I thought of was, you know – the Spotify or music app integrations that they talked about, that's a huge opportunity for churches because music is such a pivotal part of our faith. So how cool would it be for, you know, the church to put a playlist together of the churches that they sang on, or sorry, the songs that they sing on Sunday, or feature a playlist for the week and where someone can start listening to the music directly inside Facebook's story is amazing. So I think that some organizations have kind of discounted the power of story if they don't have the 10,000 follower mark. I think we're all jealous of Nils, because I'm pretty sure, don't you have 10,000 followers, Nils? And you can put that secret cool link.
the swipe up.
Yeah, the swipe up. We don't have that at Vanderblumen. But I think that organizations can use some creative ways to get around that, still put the link in profile, use cool things like the music embed that's about to be released. because we see so much more engagement through our stories than we do in our organic Instagram posts. Like, we don't even have like 40 or 50 likes on the posts, but our story, it'll tell us, has been shown to, you know, 200 people or something crazy. So I think we need to pay attention to stories.
For sure. I think it's interesting. They have so many different platforms and how many different experiences people have with how they interact with Facebook. Like my wife, the way she interacts with Instagram is completely different than me. Nils, do you think there's one place in particular churches should pay attention to though, or is it like, you know, if you have the means, you should be exploring every little niche subculture within all of these different apps?
Even in social media, anybody with the means can't experiment everywhere. Like there are so many, I mean, like Pinterest is a platform right now that I'm paying no attention to, but there's somebody that's a good core niche for. I think though, if there's two key areas of focus that most churches need to be paying attention to, it's stories and bots. I think if there's really opportunities that they aren't utilizing effectively yet. And I think I was surprised to not hear more bot conversations. And
Eddie's got you. Eddie wants to talk about bots.
I want to hear about bots, but it's a big deal. Messenger is such a big deal. We heard about WhatsApp a little bit, but I think the direct form of communication that comes through Messenger is a huge deal. But I think the medium of stories is, I think, the interesting new development that Snapchat really made popular recently. I think what's really interesting about what their announcement was today is they essentially said, we're opening up the API for this, which basically allows marketers like us to jump in and I think like flood it with pre-created content and scheduled settings. And so I'm curious if it's going to ruin stories in some ways or what kind of controls they're going to put on that. Because you think about Facebook early on, it had to be manually done and Facebook wouldn't let you schedule it through Hootsuite and other platforms. And then they added their own schedule feature. And now it's as if none of us really post anything in real time. And it's all pre-scheduled, pre-thought out, and over-produced. Yeah. And so I'm wondering if it's going to, in some ways, ruin stories. Now, as a marketer, it makes it a whole lot easier for us because we're doing it in a very manual way for a lot of our clients. But I don't know. I'm interested to see what that really means for the function of stories.
And yeah, Nick, what? Yeah, go ahead, Holly.
I was going to say, I was going to throw this to Nick because I know this is something Nick and I have talked about before, but to your point, Nils, I feel like that's why it's so important for marketers to realize that you should build an audience on a platform that you own versus one that you rent. And so I think if there are people watching today, to remember that we are still renting from Facebook and Messenger and Instagram, and at any second, at F9, you know, they could tell us that we now have to pay to show our stories to anyone. And so I know, you know, Nick, you're passionate about that too. If you want to speak to that, marketers out there that are thinking, oh, we should start 1 million groups. Well, but those, you don't have those people's email addresses that you own. So that's just something to think about.
Yeah, I mean, my comment on that would be, I saw somebody post recently, I think it was last week, and they said, Google won't let me advertise my church. And that wasn't really the case. It was kind of blown out of proportion. The thing that was happening was they were trying to use a remarketing tool that Google offers. And remarketing, obviously, is highly leveraging very personal data. And they've got very clear rules about how you can't use remarketing to target people for religious proselytization and religious purposes. And so it's like that, I think, really highlighted for me, you have to play by their rules. So, you know, we're renting space, Holly, like you said, which means, you know, they can take their ball and go home if they want to at any point. But I don't think we should, you know, be scared or let that deter us because you still want to go where people are. And this is an obvious statement that there are billions of people on Facebook. And so you have to have a presence there. I think you should. It'd be somewhat irresponsible if you didn't. But think about how can you use that activity on Facebook and really offer, I think, valuable interactions with properties that you do own. So what's your owned media? What's your owned digital spaces, like a website or an app or something? That you can drive people toward, and how do you get cross-pollination between those two things? And I think for a church, Something that seems fairly obvious to me is like there's an online church experience that a lot of churches are streaming online services that are still pretty, for the most part, owned by the church. And so if there's ways to integrate those two, you know, like streaming that service into Facebook to capture an audience, but making them aware that there's a suite of other services and there's more features available if you go watch it natively on our website, you know, that would be an idea about how you could, how you pull people from one into the other.
Yeah, all really good. I do want to jump back into bots because Eddie wanted to know about it, but also because Nils, you just sort of referenced it and we didn't dig in. I didn't hear them say a bunch of stuff specifically about bots, but I know they'll talk about it in later sessions. Feel free to get tactical here, but what should be the bot strategy or what should churches pay attention to in the bot realm?
You know, I think the big news that came out around bots, and they didn't speak to bots, is that basically you can now have bots again. So they had frozen all new bots if you were submitting a bot. So I feel like the last couple of months, I've been building bots that I didn't know if they were ever, is it going to be 6 months, is it going to be a year before these bots can be submitted then for approval within Facebook. So I think that's the biggest news coming out of today, is that you can now release bots.
Well, let me get specific here for someone
that's
watching.
That's the biggest news today, Nils. You're going to say that's the biggest news.
How are you building bots? Just so people, are you a super smart programmer, or what are you doing to build a bot?
So I am not a programmer. I don't even know HTML. But we use a platform called, and I will say too, I haven't even built a bot myself. So we have a team who builds bots.
Oh,
but
you heard it here first, folks.
But I do think anybody can build a bot. I have played with the bot platform quite a bit. I want to be honest about that I have not built a bot myself from start to finish. But ChatFuel is the program we use. I think MiniChat is what most people are using. I personally prefer ChatFuel just because of the visual function that it has built into the platform. But bots are so limitless. But I think you can geek out about them all day about what they can do. But at the core that I see with bots is bots is like your email list for Facebook. And so bots is a way that people can subscribe to you on Messenger, and you can message them in mass, or you can message them in a very kind of hyper-personalized way. There are so many things that can trickle down and do from an automation standpoint that's really exciting. But I think people get confused by the term bots, and they're like, it freaks them out. Like, this is like 2027. It's like, no, bots can be made today very simply and easily. Just think of it as like your MailChimp from Facebook, and set up your bot account, get people subscribed, and start messaging them. I feel like that's the core. If that's where a church should start when it comes to bots, then as you start playing with it, you'll start seeing some other features and functions. You can do donations through Messenger. You can do all kinds of things through Messenger. People can register for your events. But don't even think about that yet. Just get people signed up so that you can message them like you do get them signed up for your email list. And I think that's where you start.
Holly, have y'all done much with bots? Do you have any opinion on the bot world?
Yeah, we use ChatFuel, like Nils mentioned. We do have a team member who can get dangerous with some coding. No, she's awesome. I'm so grateful she's on our team because I don't know anything about coding, but I have lots of ideas. And so she started running with ChatFuel, and we were able to kind of play around with, if somebody messages us on Facebook, you know, we can send them, we can ask them, hey, do you want to read our blog or do you want to look at our job opportunities? And so you can start sending people tailored content depending on what they're looking for. And also, I don't know that this is ChatFuel, but using some of the built-in Messenger bot-ish features, I'm making up lots of my own words today, to get a higher response rate, so that, because ridiculous responsiveness is one of our values as an organization. And so we've turned that on in our Facebook Messenger so that, you know, when people message us, they're getting something to know that the message was received, even if it's not a human responding quite yet. They at least know that their message was received. And so, I think we have just barely scratched the surface of what bots will look like, but I definitely think it's something we should be paying attention to as, you know, in ministry.
Nick, I'm curious. One of the things that I thought was sort of cool, they mentioned the growth of Messenger as a platform and then called out all the partners that they were working with that made that possible. Yeah. As we talk about partnerships sometimes at CVNA, like what are your thoughts on Facebook as a gigantic organization sort of like leading the way and saying this is how you can partner effectively? Did you pull that out from that little showcase of all the partners?
That's a very interesting thought. I want to mention Messenger as a platform. I think you saw that same type of thing also with like the group chat feature. So he started by talking about it in Instagram, but then it's into WhatsApp. And just, I think the picture that came to my mind was like this, one of those old school, I have never seen one, but I've seen them on the old movies where the operators are like plugging in all the different cords, you know? It's like, I think Facebook is kind of like that now. You've got all these services and they can just slot in a modular format these different things into whether it's Instagram, WhatsApp, Facebook, Messenger as a platform. And in the context of all of that, Chad, to your point, is I think they are starting to get a lot better at equipping their partners to truly like get the most out of all of these services. So we had a fun time with Nona Jones, who heads strategic partnerships for Facebook and is doing a ton of work with churches. Their mission is to build meaningful community. And for those of you who know Nona, you'll know that they called her after they changed their mission statement about 18 months ago or so. And said, hey, we want you to come on and head this idea. Like, how do we help different partners grow meaningful communities? And then somebody from Facebook, like Nona, has this basically this huge toolbox to help partners figure out, like, what should you be doing best that matches up with your mission? I think that's really fascinating and very exciting because it's going to, I think, make more public from Facebook. Like, hey, these are the people that we're highlighting as great partners. That's going to be something that's really interesting to watch. Because if Facebook's saying, this is a really good partner, they're doing this really well, like, you can read into that. That's the direction that they want you to move in. And while, like, the rebellious part of me doesn't want to be led by Facebook, some of us on here have talked in the past about how if you understand a company's business model, you understand what they're trying to accomplish, how does your mission align with that? And how can you use whatever they're offering to get overlap in your mission and theirs? And that, I think, is a really good picture of what partnerships looks like. I hope we see more of that.
Well, and Holly, I want to mention something you mentioned in the group chat is how incredibly clear Facebook's mission is and how that's sort of a challenge to churches to clarify their mission. Tell me more about what you're talking about in there.
Well, I mean, from the very first sentence that Mark, when he walked on stage, to the very last statement that they signed off the whole keynote with, it was, we're here to help people communicate and build stronger relationships. And every single speaker took the features and the products they were talking about back to that one statement. And for me as a marketer, that's one of the hardest things is figuring out what is that clear, concise, value add statement, you know, whether it's, you call it your mission statement or your vision statement or your value proposition, whatever the buzzword is. I think clear and concise and making it about, for them, the customer, for us, it should be, you know, our seekers or our congregants or our communities. It's so hard to find clarity because as marketers, we have all of these ideas, right? And we want to run in a million different directions and we want to try every single platform. But that can cause us to get distracted and not, you know, confused. If we're confused, then the people who are visiting our platforms are going to be confused. And so that was one of the big takeaways for me was clarity is so important. And they're this billions of dollar, you know, publicly traded company. And it was so clear that they're there to help you communicate and build stronger relationships.
Mm. For sure. Nils, tell me this. You're such a visionary, innovative. What's your title is like global innovation master of the church world. If you got an elevator ride with the most old school pastor who's like, you know, the internet's for heathens and Northeast liberals, how are you going to talk sense into them to pitch Facebook or the internet in general as a ministry opportunity?
The first thing I would say, Chad, is that I have not had to have that conversation a year. 6 years ago, I had that conversation twice a week. It was selling Facebook as this isn't the devil. This is a ministry opportunity. Today, the conversation I have is, man, I wish I had paid more attention 4 years ago, 5 years ago. And now can you help me teach me something about this? Because I gotta catch up. So I have that conversation so little now. If you cannot see a ministry opportunity with 2 billion active users, I don't know what kind of ministry you're ever going to be effective in.
So 2 billion, you know, the organization that Chad and I are with, we have a goal to reach 1 billion people with the gospel. Yeah. Very conceivable. Nobody questions that anymore. So how do you take what's the next step beyond that?
Let me pause real quick, Nick. We're going to say bye to Holly for a second, and then we'll get to that question.
That was an excellent question, Nick, and I'm going to let Nils answer.
Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time.
Bye, guys.
Yeah. Y'all go ahead.
So I think there's so much to that with Facebook, but I think the reality is it's not just about reaching the 2 billion. I think it's how do you reach even your local community? And I think it's, you know, Brady Shear does such a great job of this with his podcast and the content he puts out is how do we use Facebook to connect between Sundays? Because there's so many ministry opportunities from connecting people relationally, connecting people with content, and building relationships on this platform that it's not just about 2 billion people on the platform logging in. I think the average user in the United States spends 32 minutes a day on the platform is what I've heard. It's how do you maximize, that's where people are engaging. And we have an opportunity to be a part of it. Historically, we would say they're watching TV that much. Well, it was very expensive to get on TV. Now, we all have an iPhone. We all have the ability to create content to engage people in that time. So it's really a matter of how it is that we utilize those platforms. And I think, Chad, to your question earlier, the question I think a pastor is asking is if even why I should get on there. The question they're saying is such bad things happen on Facebook. And I hear it all the time. Of people cheated on their spouses because of Facebook. People did certain things. That is a reality. Is people found pornography through social media. They run into terrible things and have negative interactions. I think that's even more reason pastorally we need to be engaged there and need to be helping them. How do you set healthy boundaries? If you're spending 2 hours a day on Facebook, that's probably not healthy. We need to shepherd people on how to effectively use Facebook. If you're spending, you know, if your spouse doesn't have your password and you're not giving them access to social media, that's a problem. I think we have a pastoral responsibility of how do we interact in this new day. But I think we have a pastoral opportunity to find new engaging opportunities to reach people locally. Or what we did with online church is we took our local church global through Facebook, which was connecting the world. And we just piggybacked on what they were doing. And I think it's what you guys are doing at CB so well is you have a mission to reach 1 billion. So your goal is to reach half of Facebook. You know, it's pretty easy. They connected the people. Now you navigate through that to see how you then reach them effectively through that platform that Facebook has built.
Let me, I'm going to do this. I did this in the last panel because we got people queued up to come in. I'm going to give each of you a little solo stump here to make the case for Facebook for churches and ministries. I know you were sort of just doing that, Nils, but Nick, we're trying to touch 1 billion people at CV. Here's your time. Tell me how we should be thinking about Facebook.
Yeah, I think we should not be thinking about how do I get a single message, you know, a one-time shot in with 1 billion people. I think instead the right way, the real opportunity rather is this hyper local engagement. If discipleship happens in the context of relationships, Facebook is all about building meaningful relationships. We can use these tools and use their scope to build meaningful discipleship relationships with people in our communities. And I think with F8 and, you know, year over year, they're rolling out more and more interesting tools and new ways to really approach that. And so do the hard thing, make it very, very personal, and then do that at scale. That's where I think real life change is going to come into play.
Awesome. Cool. Nils, it's your floor, man.
I would say not to sell Facebook, but how to utilize Facebook is to utilize Facebook to build relationships. Don't use Facebook as your announcement platform. Use Facebook as your relationships platform. It's a great way to build relationships with people in your community, like Nick talked about, that you might not yet know. It's a great way to build relationships with those people in your local congregation. It's a great way to create a platform for those in your local congregation to connect with each other. And so use it as a platform to augment the relationships that you're building in your local communities. And maybe that will allow your local church to go global, or maybe it will allow your local community to be even tighter by utilizing this platform that Facebook has built. It's all about relationships. It's all about community. And Facebook has built an incredible tool for us, literally for free, even though we don't always perceive it as free, to do that in such an effective way.
Awesome. Good words from both of y'all. Thanks for joining us. Everybody say bye to Nils and Nick. And we're going to shuffle those smart people out for some other smart people. We have the privilege here of having Jennifer Miles. I'm going to bring her in, and then I've got another person to intro as well. Jennifer, how are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
Where in the world are you? You in the Pacific Northwest?
I am. I'm up in Bellingham, Washington.
Awesome. Well, tell me your general reactions. For everybody at home, Jennifer has a humongous history with online advertising for the church, also social media, just general strategy as well, online church, physical campuses. What did you think about the whole sort of soiree?
The big thing is, I don't think any of it was a surprise. Facebook has been doing a really good job over the last few months trying to kind of recover. Like Kenny has been saying, this is a big PR thing. Mill said the same thing. So for me, a lot of it was what I expected, and I'm really happy to see that they're looking at the relationship side and cleaning things up a little bit. All this is really doing is going to focus churches on relationship first, more into the content. So I was really happy to see everything they said.
Cool. Well, we're going to be joined on this panel by a distinguished guest here. DJ Soto is, you may have read this gigantic article on his VR church in Wired Magazine. DJ, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me, Chad. It's good to be on.
You obviously have a vested interest in what Facebook is doing, because VR is such a big part of it. Any big news for you? Any cool things that you were sort of excited about?
Oh, man. The big announcement from Mark Zuckerberg about the Oculus Go going on sale today, that was huge news, because VR has been kind of expensive. And, to get a fancy computer, get the headset, that's kind of an arduous ordeal to get that set up. But now you have the first virtual reality headset. You don't need a computer. And you don't need a phone like the Samsung phone for those other VR headsets. It's the first standalone. It's really priced very accessibly. So I think this is going to start to push that adoption of VR into the masses. I don't know if it's going to be the big tsunami, but it's definitely a huge step in the right direction. And I think it's going to be awesome. And, my church exists completely in virtual reality. So I think we're going to see an influx of people visiting over the next few weeks. So we're really excited about that.
Cool. Also, we have one more person on this panel. I'm going to bring him in here. He's so old school. He's just online church. He's not virtual reality church. I got Jay Cran as the online campus pastor at Saddleback. Jay, what did you think about Zuckerberg and everybody, what they had to say?
Totally. Yeah. For me personally, I'm going through my pastoral hat of the groups. And so I think the Facebook groups, the WhatsApp kind of group calling, making it easier for people to have kind of small group conversations for me. And people get to pick their poison of how they want to do that. If they want to do it on Facebook or WhatsApp, obviously more international friendly. I love that, because number one, if I can allow my large group settings to kind of more naturally turn into small conversations, and have that happen in an online setting, then you can start having like healthy biblical community on a larger level. So those are the things that kind of stood out to me. And of course, all the Facebook group advanced features that I bet you guys have already kind of covered today.
Yeah, so I love the fact that you said the goal is to have a healthy biblical community, and I'm talking to an online pastor, a VR pastor, and then and Jennifer's done just a ton of, you know, driving direct ads and stuff for. So Jennifer, explain to me what healthy biblical community looks like in 2018. Softball question to you.
Oh, healthy biblical community. Well, so we've had a lot of conversations about this from an ad perspective. And when I look at Facebook and relationship, it's all about connecting with your internal community, the community that you have, that you talk with every Sunday, that you meet within your small group, and leveraging the platform to grow those relationships and to help with discipleship. It's not necessarily about connecting with people who don't know who you are. And so I'm really excited from this perspective that we're really talking about growing biblical relationships and biblical community and leveraging that for real life relationship and taking that outside of real life into online so you continue that conversation throughout the week when you're not sitting there in a Sunday service. I mean, that's biblical community online to me, is moving it from online, moving it from real life relationship in person into that online relationship throughout the week.
Yeah. So DJ, tell me more about that, because there's probably, and I'm sure you're used to this by this point, but there's probably a lot of people watching that are like, what does that mean, VR church? And I saw it in one of the other comment threads, because again, if you're jumping in the middle of this, we're broadcasting this from multiple pages at once. But somebody was like, what is VR church? What does that mean? What does that look like? Can you just explain to people for a bit what it is, basically?
Virtual reality church. It's a church that exists entirely in VR. So people will put on a VR headset and they'll teleport into a three-dimensional environment. So if you've seen like Ready Player One that just came out, you know, with avatars walking around, people hanging around and chatting, I mean, that's a similar, it's not exactly that high detailed environment, but it's similar in a sense that avatars are walking around, they're waving at each other because we have like touch controls and they can see the hand movements, they see my head moving around. So you're walking around, you're chatting, there's 3D spatial audio. So if a group of people are in the distance chatting, you can't hear them as much, but if they're close to you, you can hear them. So I say, what's it like at your physical church? I said, that's what it's kind of like in virtual reality, except with avatars. There's a building. We have worship music. I lead a sermon. Sometimes we'll have live music with one of my worship leaders. There's greeters. There's volunteers. It's all those elements just in a VR environment with 3D avatars. And it's crazy. Like Zuckerberg says, he said that quote today, it feels like you're there, virtual reality. And that's the same thing. It feels like you're there. It feels like you're a part of this environment. It's pretty amazing. And for those like that have tried it, like I've explained VR to people and, you know, they're like, oh, I kind of don't get it. I put the headset on them and just in an instant, they understand what I'm talking about. So that's the kind of what VR church is all about in a nutshell.
Jay, I'm curious. I know you've investigated a lot and thought really deeply about this, like what a online campus or an online service should feel like or be like in comparison with like the physical campus. Was there any new information today or anywhere particularly on any of the Facebook platforms where you're focusing your sort of time and attention and TLC for the online campus at Saddleback?
Yeah, I mean, personally, there's been a lot of time for me over the last like year really about the group setting. And one of the big things that I hear a lot in my community is who's watching near me? Can I connect with people part of the online community? And we can't naturally do that without like, you know, breaking some NSA law, connecting people locally. We don't really want to share their information unless somebody opts in. And a Facebook group for us over the last couple months has really become more of our patio experience for people to connect with each other, have conversations, interact whenever there's not a live service. And even in our context, and I think a lot of people's context is, you know, less than 30% of our audience every week watches a live service. 70% watch it on demand, which is great. But the problem is that those people can't interact with a live chat with other people. So the Facebook group, the patio experience has been a lot better. And so for me, Facebook's been doing this with the insights feature, being able to see who's commenting and kind of getting better data and metrics from that. The watch party feature that kind of was already out, but now it seems like they're going to roll it out on a larger level. I know I just did an event last night that I stream live into my Facebook group. And, you know, I know that that experience can get more robust. We can have more control and be able to connect people. And for me, it's, I want to not be the one that has to do the connection. I want to be on a platform that naturally connects people locally, where I'm not the bottleneck. And I felt like for a long time on our website or on our church online kind of subdomain site, where we were serving, the problem was somebody had to fill out a response card and then we had to connect them. Where in our Facebook group now, there's this peer-to-peer connection that's happening organically when I sleep. And I can't tell you how awesome it is to go to bed at night and see right after I go to bed, somebody posts a prayer request. And when I wake up, 30 people already prayed over that. And I didn't have to approve it. I didn't have to put somebody into a group. It just naturally happens. And I think that's the power of Facebook groups. And you can see why they're like, you know, focusing a lot of those efforts. But for me, all those features, I just saw yesterday too, like they allowed me to like color. I don't know what it does, but I now can control the color of my Facebook group. I don't know what that actually does, but I saw that.
There's feature. Some deep psychological thing. I know. That's doing to you, it's probably. Like
they spent millions on this shade of blue. Yeah.
So Jennifer, I'm curious, with platforms like VR Church, online church, even physical church, you and I have talked a lot about analytics and metrics. We're talking about digital tools. Where would you recommend churches or ministries start when they're looking at tracking stuff? What would you explain to them where they should be looking on all these different platforms?
Well, it kind of depends on what the platform is. I know when I'm looking at things for church online, I'm often looking at not just how many people are coming every week. I mean, that's a great surface number, but I'm looking at how many people are coming back, how consistently they're coming back, how long they're staying. The hardest part, and I'm sure Jay, you get this because you also do Facebook Live stuff. It's different in every platform. And so trying to come up with something that's fairly consistent, are they staying 10 seconds? Are they staying 30 seconds? What's their recency? What's their frequency? And so I just pick four numbers and stick with it. I normally say how many people are showing up, how many people are returning, how long are they staying? And then is there one other conversion that I can do that's more of an engagement metric? Do I value small groups? How many people are in small groups? Do I value volunteers? How many people are doing that? And whatever that one thing is for your ministry, pick that one. What's the next engagement step? And just stick with the four. Make it easy. Yeah.
DJ, like, what are you looking at when you're looking at your weekly services? What kind of, how do you know if you're doing well as a VR church?
You know, it's such a new and pioneering space that, you know, I don't think we've set, you know, benchmarks or evaluation tools for that. I think we're just like almost like a startup church, just trying to be faithful week to week and do the teaching and the live services. So, you know, right now we're just focusing on being consistent and doing presenting a solid, you know, Sunday service and with the music and with the sermon. And, you know, I think that's our focus right now is week to week. Let's just do something solid, you know, with excellence. Let's focus on, you know, conveying the love of God and just a passionate and, you know, just as much as we can to anybody who comes in, man, we just want to share the love of God. So I think we're focusing on those elements.
So I do want to jump back because we talked about this in previous segments, but Zuckerberg started off with sort of reiterating that they are being good, you know, good leaders of society, basically, that they're building tools for good. And he touched on keeping people safe through election integrity, fake news, data privacy. Are any of you concerned about any of that stuff personally? Do you ever worry about it? No, I'm getting those, Jay.
I don't. And I know Chad, you and I, we talk about this every once in a while, but like, I do think it's funny that generally it does feel like that Facebook really doesn't care about us individually. They more care about the user groups we're part of. So I do find, I know like there's a lot of people that say this, but the irony that they don't really care about me, Jay. They care about if I'm a Republican, if I'm a Democrat. They care about if I like Facebook or if I watch the Lakers, because they can't really make money off me personally, but they can make money if I'm part of other user groups. So I do find the irony of like, I feel like, and they talked about it today, you're going to be able to clear your history and you're going to be able to opt out on some level of a user group. And because you know, first off, I don't think a lot of, you know, the real push is going to be, will they make it a default? Only if they make it a default will that be a widespread thing. And I know that will be the push on them. But for me, I don't really stress about it. I do think that there's a legitimate case to be made about somebody proactively tracking your religious identity, even your sexual orientation. A lot of these things could be used in the wrong hands, but I don't generally care. I think for me personally, I always will go towards security over privacy. And I always assume people are using my private information to protect me. Doesn't mean that's always the case, but I lean that way generally.
Yeah, it's because you're in California, you inherently trust everybody else in California. Jennifer, let's talk about ads for a second. We haven't talked about advertising at all. Where do Facebook ads fall in the broader church strategy plan?
Well, I guess the first thing I'll say is that all these changes that they're doing with third-party information and what they're tracking and not is actually going to be a really good thing for us from the perspective that it puts churches back to focusing on relationship and not necessarily broadcasting ads to everybody and anything. I'm actually loving the fact that we don't have the targeting we used to have and that we might not potentially have it for long because we have to think about the relationship side of it, what we're bringing from a value perspective and a content perspective. So it's been great from that perspective. When I look at ads, I actually don't do a lot of what we call cold ads anymore on Facebook. Real quick, if you don't know what a marketing funnel is, cold is people who've never heard of you, warm is people who know who you are and maybe engage with you on some level, and hot is people who are really sold out for you. I don't actually use Facebook ads a lot for cold people anymore. What I do use Facebook ads for are those warm people and trying to bring them value and those hot people trying to empower them to go out and build their relationship. Word of mouth is really what works, and word of mouth is a personal thing, not an advertisement. So I've shifted more towards that from an advertising perspective.
Yeah, for sure. I say it all the time. Word of mouth will always be the best marketing medium as far as driving traffic. And DJ, I think it's interesting how have you acquired members of your congregation? What have you used to drive traffic to VR Church?
Yeah, I mean, we used some basic things like on Facebook and trying to get that awareness out there. But really, since we have kind of at this time in the VR history, a niche community, we just kind of engage in the VR level. So in the metaverse and in Altspace VR, that's the platform we use. There's people are hanging out, there's campfires, there's comedy nights. So we're always hanging out there, creating relationships, making friends. I have volunteers that tell me, you know, they go and hang out with people and invite them to church. And a lot of people just come by word of mouth. And there's also a calendar of events section. So when you go into VR and when you go into Altspace, you'll see comedy night or, you know, open mic night, but then you also see virtual reality church. So those are the different elements we kind of, you know, tap into to kind of create awareness, number one, and then to encourage engagement. So.
Yeah, cool. And we saw one of your kids sneak behind you there, which reminded me of something Zuckerberg said I'm sure he said it other times, but he said they want to make it to where people can share anything from anywhere to anyone. And we should point out you are fully mobile as a family. Can you explain that? And Jen can sort of nod and wink at that because she knows what that's like. But explain people what you're doing there.
Oh, that's awesome, Jen. We travel full time. We're in a travel trailer and we're just going across the country. Trying to raise support, trying to bring awareness to Virtual Reality Church. And so we've been Boston, Orlando, Upper Peninsula of Michigan. We're currently in San Diego. We're going to be up in San Fran, Cisco pretty soon. So, and during all that travel, we've been leading Virtual Reality Church. And so every Sunday, it's important for us that we find a place with good internet. We might have to rent an office if the RV place doesn't have good Wi-Fi, which they usually don't. But so I'll be leading Virtual Reality Church. Like the pastor of the future is going to be very mobile. And so I'll be in the travel trailer. Maybe I'll be in a rented office space in Santa Monica, or I'll be in someone's home if they've opened that up to lead VR Church. And, you know, for us too, going back to the engagement side of things, we also use a platform called Discord. And so Discord is what a lot of gamers use, their clans and their guilds for their online gaming. And so we kind of use that for community to interact with the week. So we have our Sunday VR church services, and then couple that with our weekly Discord interaction. And there's a pretty high sense of community with our VR church.
Now, Jay, you're stuck in dreary old Southern California. But at the same time, you sort of touched on this, and I think you're the only one in our little group that really has spent a lot of time on WhatsApp. Can you talk for a little bit about the sort of international aspect of what's sort of inherently comes with having a big online church?
Yeah, totally. And first off, I'm using natural light. I just want to let you know this is natural light on my face.
Yeah, so am I. So am I. So it looks great.
That's great. So, and DJ and I just hung out. We just got dinner a couple of days ago. Yeah. His family. So yeah, he was down here.
He's a nice guy. I like him.
No, and we have the same glasses. So we literally have the exact same Warby Parker glasses. Yeah, so right. Yeah. So for, you know, something that we've experienced obviously online is with our community is a lot of people responding. And one of the hard transitions for us has been, and I wouldn't even say we fully made the transition, is a lot of our response card and even our follow-up process was all email dependent. And so people filling out response cards, that sends a trigger to send to somebody, and then we can kind of follow up on that. And the problem was, when you're kind of going off into some of these places outside of America, and specifically outside of Europe and America, they're going to have a mobile phone, and they're going to use, you know, text messaging most likely. And if we really want to engage people on a, you know, on a personal level and have conversations about God, we need to move beyond this email centric kind of system, which is powerful, but not really scalable. And so WhatsApp has been something we've invested heavily into because it's something that you don't need to have an account for. You can just hook up your phone number. You can just kind of go. And the idea is that you can start getting text messages from anyone, anywhere. And it's been powerful. So like what we started using Zendesk as kind of our like hub to kind of process stuff. And you can actually hook up a phone number and kind of do some of these things. And so I have some of the stuff triggered in there right now. But WhatsApp's been powerful because, yeah, people can just text you. And I can't tell you, like 7 years ago when I was first doing this, like messing around with online church, I can't tell you how problem, like it just was such a pain when somebody would give me an international number and there would be like these five numbers ahead with these awkward spaces. And is that an area code, a country? I don't know what this is. And I remember I had to get my phone number at my work internationally approved so I can call. And now like I can just, I sign up and I use the things I use that probably local pastors don't use a ton of, I use WhatsApp and I also use WeChat. And those are two things people can kind of send in and similar things, different areas, but it's just a powerful tool for sure.
For sure, yeah. And WeChat, for people that don't know, is a really huge platform in China. Okay, cool. We're coming to the close of this segment, or close to it, but I want to make sure that each of you has sort of a stump segment to tell me whatever you want to tell me about Facebook or F8. Talking to mostly pastors and ministry leaders that are watching us. And again, and this is sort of a weird thing. We're broadcasting this Facebook Live, I think from like 10 different Facebook pages. So we don't know where you're watching from, or if you're watching live or you're watching on the replay. But to start, DJ, can you go ahead and just sort of have the floor here and tell us what you think about Facebook in general and where it fits in for you guys?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's a statement I made, and it seems pretty grandiose, but I think that virtual reality is going to be one of the most disruptive technologies the church has faced. And so someone might say, well, why do you say that? Well, forget F8, go back to the fall where Mark Zuckerberg said, we want 1 billion people in VR. And then they put the money where their mouth is, and they put like 2 to 3, maybe even $4 billion to buy Oculus. So you have the largest social network and largest and most perhaps most influential social network saying 1 billion people, and we're spending billions of dollars. So even though you're not seeing the fruition of that, I mean, coming out the other side of that is going to be a significant imprint into our culture of virtual reality and augmented reality. And so I think it's going to be huge. And, you know, for us, we're really excited about it. And you know, for us, it's more than just the innovative use of technology. We're excited about, you know, the changed lives and people breaking free from addictions and strongholds. So there's an opportunity here to really reach people that we've never reached before as a church. And I hope churches, you know, really get into VR. I mean, maybe they're not going to set up their whole virtual reality church, but they're at least engaging in it, experimenting with it, checking it out to see how they can leverage it to reach the world for Jesus Christ. And so, yeah, we're pumped about it. God's not, you know, limited to any dimension. He's a multidimensional God. So, you know, we're really excited about what the future holds for a virtual reality church.
Awesome. Thanks, man. Okay, Jen, you are always challenging me with really insightful tidbits in the digital realm. The floor is yours.
Oh, it's so exciting. Here's my short answer. Keep it simple. We hear from these amazing people who do amazing things. Like Jay's church is awesome. I love following what he's doing. But the reality is I'm a 50-person church. I'm not going to be able to do what Jay's doing. Keep it simple. Pick one platform. Focus on it. The other part of that is be realistic. Be who you are. It doesn't have to be perfect. So I look at Instagram stories and I look at these amazing stories. Well, I'm not going to do that. Your church probably isn't going to do that if you're a 50-person church. So it's okay to pick one thing and do it. Just do it. It doesn't have to be perfect. Again, the other part of that is it's about relationship. Realize that what you're really reaching is the people who already love you. So it doesn't have to be perfect. Again, you're going to be on a Facebook page where people follow you. They want to hear what you have to say. We as a church have content every week that's fresh. Use your fresh content, use it in new ways. I think, Jay, you guys do this where you take like 1 minute, 2 minute summaries of what you do every week. You post it throughout the week and have conversation. It's a great way to take offline relationships online and continue it through the week. So it's not just Sunday. But keep it simple is kind of my motto right now.
Awesome. I love that. And that is good to bring us back to reality because probably the average person watching this is not a super famous online campus pastor at Saddleback like Jay Cranda. Jay, what are your thoughts? The floor is yours. Tell us something really amazing.
I did have like a random question for DJ. Did they announce that they're going to be two? Like, is the Oculus Go only having one holder or is it going to be two? Because I only saw one.
Yeah, this version's only one. There's another one coming out that's going to have two. So this is like a mobile version of VR. Cool.
I just want to point out when Niels only has a terrible setup and I buy it later and I have the full setup. Kenny, they're always the first one to buy things. So I'm always the stingy person. But I think for me, if I were to say something, it would be around on a pastoral level. I think a lot of pastors really need to start embracing Facebook Messenger and a lot of these platforms. And I can't tell you, I've had a lot of conversations and I know it's hard to manage. It used to be you'd have your work email and then the idea is that your follow-up would be limited there. But now with follow-up being attached to Facebook Messenger, it kind of carries with you longer and it can be overwhelming because you're constantly getting things. But I think I would really encourage people, as you saw it, Facebook is spending a lot of money on this messenger type of level, if it's WhatsApp or if it's Facebook Messenger, but think about the reachability to be able to like actually not just get an email from somebody, but you get to get a message from them. You can click on their profile. You can see where they're at. You can do a lot of discerning, which ultimately will allow you to care for people. But I think embrace some of that stuff a lot more. Kenny, and they're making comments about me, Kenny and Niels, as we're going. But anyway, that's what I would say.
I love it. That's great. I'm so thankful that all three of you could join us, and we're going to do a big switcheroo, but everybody say bye to Jennifer, Jay, and DJ.
Jennifer, thanks. Nice to meet you. Jay, nice earrings, buddy.
Thank you.
I thought those Apple iPod, man, those new ones. At first, I was like, Jay got some.
It's okay. Some, no. It's cool. You got the gamer set up. I love it.
All right. I'll see y'all. I can't believe I'm still going here. I hope I make it without having to use the restroom. All right, the next two guys I'm gonna bring in here. Where are we? Okay. First one, Daryl Girardier of the Church Communications Group fame. Thank you for joining us and thank you for hanging out. What were your initial reactions? What are your thoughts on the Facebook platform in 2018.
My first question, are you properly hydrated? Because you've been going for a long time.
Man, I'm hydrated. I'm worried about having to use the restroom. That's what I'm okay. worried about.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. You know what? I would say overall, the way I saw it was a little bit like it was enhancements, not new things, if that makes any sense. Like it was like, we're going to build on top of what we currently do. I was a little surprised that there wasn't like a sneak peek more towards the future. And I'm looking at two different platforms in particular. One is Amazon Echo. Like, what are they going to do in regards to a screenless environment in terms of, you know, competing with Alexa and Echo? The second thing was I didn't see a, when I look at platforms and looking at platforms that are, I would say are teenagers are using, I didn't see anything in regards to how they're going to tackle Twitch. And I say that because the more I talk to, especially young guys in our student ministry, they're on Twitch 24/7. And so I sat there and thought, okay, I see a lot of enhancements for like young adults, dating, you know, groups, live. But I sit there and kind of go, but yeah, there's a whole segment of the audience. And maybe there are other products will eventually address that. But I was kind of surprised that it didn't seem to me that it was like robust, like I didn't have a wow moment, if that makes any sense.
Gotcha. Well, let me see what this next guy joining us here. Thanks. Ryan Wakefield is part of Social Church in the Church Marketers Group. Ryan, what were your initial thoughts?
Man, I thought the biggest thing, cool thing was the stage. I was like, man, how many churches are going to want to rip off that stage and their pastor kind of walk out and then walk back? Like that's going to be what's epic. But no, I felt like Facebook tipped its hand, you know, in the last 6 months to a year, like where they were headed. So I don't think that this was anything new as much as just a continuation that, hey guys, we're headed to very much a personal, relational, meaning relationships building platform. And that's what we're going to hang our hat on. So I think on one hand, you know, nothing really new. But on the other hand, as you sit back and listen to all the platforms that they control, it's really incredible when they start talking about in Messenger and the quadrupling of messages and WhatsApp and the international impact of that. And so this, the impact of when they make a decision is huge on these platforms. And so I think the big takeaway for churches was to think through the future of social is more personal, highly relational, meaningful interactions based on really your camera, video chat, and small, meaningful experiences. That's where our world is headed. That's where Facebook is headed. And I think that's the future. If the church wants to be a part of that, it starts by understanding that approach.
Yeah, very, very true. And let me mention, if you're watching this, this segment is just the three of us. We're not waiting on anybody. I'm humbled and privileged to be with two of the guys running. If you are not in one of their groups or in both of their groups, the Church Marketers Group and the Church Communications Group, they're probably the two of the most very like tactical, hands-on, applicable stuff. If you need information on Facebook or anything really, you can get it in one of those groups. And so I actually want to start somewhere a little boring with the two of you guys because I think you probably can handle these questions. And you handle them a lot, but we haven't talked about this yet for a good reason. But Zuckerberg did reference GDPR, and GDPR, if you don't know what that is, it's an EU ruling, and it has to do with data privacy. So Zuckerberg talked about it right at the top, talking about keeping people safe. We can go pretty quickly on this if you want, but how would you advise a church to handle GDPR? Because May 25th is the day when all this stuff sort of comes into effect. Daryl, I'll softball it to you.
Go ahead.
I mean, I would tell you, to be honest with you, if I'm in your situation and GDPR is going to affect you because you're in one of those countries where it takes effect, I would say this is one of those cases where you go consult an expert. Okay, don't try to self do this because it's not quite like your taxes, but you know, you could do your taxes by yourself, but we all know that's not a really, maybe a great idea. And even a layman as myself who understands Facebook to a certain degree and marketing to a certain degree will tell you that when I've dived into the weeds, I've been like, okay, I got to go call a friend. Yeah. So don't be afraid to say, raise your hand and say, I don't get it. I don't understand it. Find somebody in your church who is a marketer who for, you know, at their company or, you know, you can reach in any of our Facebook groups and say like, hey, who understands this? Who will sit down and talk me through it? That's where I would start. Do not feel like you have to tackle this and you're by yourself on this. That would be my step one.
Yeah, Ryan, are people talking to you about GDPR, or have you been able to?
Not a whole lot of discussion yet. And if I get one pass per session, I might take it on this question. I agree. I think there's probably a huge service that could be done for the church world, an expert that could say, hey, here's the resources, just go through this, here's what you need to do. But I'm probably not that person. In fact, not probably, I'm not.
Yeah, for sure. And I usually disqualify myself if I ever say, I'm like, you shouldn't take this as advice legally, right. But okay, so let's jump into I think there are two areas actually that y'all are really good to talk about that we haven't talked about that much. One is bots. Daryl, would you advise an average church to be exploring a messenger bot at this point, or is that still sort of higher level, bigger church territory?
I would say actually on some level, you asked me 6 months ago, I would have said, yeah. And then we ourselves, and I mean, I do some coding, and one of my coworkers here at the church obviously does some coding. And I got into it and thought, you know what? It's not that hard. In fact, we built one just to answer simple questions about date, time, location, all that kind of stuff. So I would tell you, go for it. It's a bit of a trial and error, but we really enjoyed it. We had a lot of fun with it. And so, and we got people who, it actually kind of worked. Somebody asked a question, what time's worship service? The bot responded with the time. And I was like, hey, this is kind of cool. So I say go for it. Cause I think sometimes with features, it's okay to do something just cause it's cool. And I think the fact that I was able to show my pastor that, he was like, that's really cool. And okay, I see how this works. So yeah, I think the water's warm enough. Jump on in, try it out, see what you think.
Yeah. What do you think, Ryan?
I think there's two different aspects to this. When you talk about Facebook Messenger bots, there's kind of and I heard the conversation earlier, there's the messaging aspect, which somebody described it as like MailChimp, but using Facebook Messenger. And so I use Message Hero for this. I think there's a huge value in this where you can drive conversation from your post on a public page into Messenger and keep that conversation going on. And there's some automation that you can do. There's some broadcasting you can do. So I think there's a huge opportunity for the church to utilize Messenger much more than we currently are and utilize it in creative ways. So if you're doing live streaming, for example, and somebody's commenting, you can have your page privately message them, say, hey, thanks, Chad, for jumping on the live stream. Hopefully you're doing good this Sunday. And it could be all personalized but automated. And then say, hey, is there anything that you would like us to pray for you about? Right. And so now you've taken a conversation that was happening on a page and driven it into Messenger. And then also that person, when you start, conversating back and forth, now becomes a subscriber to your page's messages. So now when your church is doing something big, you have to use it almost like a text message because it is so personal right into their, Messenger inbox, where you can kind of broadcast out to all your subscribers, hey, baptism event is tonight. And now you may also be using email and text and Messenger appropriately. So I think there's that whole side. And then I think there's the bot side, which is your programming artificial intelligence to develop some sort of conversation and relationship for you on behalf of the church. And I would say for churches, be careful. I think there is a definite place for that, but you want to do it right. And you want your bot, so to speak, to be on point, on message. You want it to have your own personality and feel. You don't want it to be spammy or broken, because again, what we heard Mark talk about is it's all about relationships and meaningful relationships. And if you start trying to offload onto a bot that doesn't capture your brand or your heart or your passion, then you're going the opposite direction of the whole direction social's going. So I think there's powerful potential, but just like with everything communication, you have to understand it, what you're trying to do, and make sure it's on point.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, we built a messenger bot through ManyChat, which is another service you can use, like ChatFuel or the one you're using. But we built it right when it came out, and it's, I'm always just like, oh, this thing's out, I'm gonna build something. And coincidentally, it's featured in Messenger as a bot. And it has been for months, and somebody, it's a human approved kind of thing. And we get 20 or 30 messages a day just from people stumbling into that. And all from this bot that I built once that really isn't that sophisticated, but it's just like, you know, it's sort of it's the in between, like, do people know that they're talking to a bot? Like, sometimes you got to just, in simple copywriting, make sure they understand the experience. It's like, I'm not trying to trick you. You're not really talking to me. But, you know, some people will be confused no matter what you do on Facebook. But Daryl, I do want to talk about your point. Maybe this goes in the category of what they didn't say, or I'm sure they're working on something in the realm, but you were talking about an Alexa competitor, like the whole realm of voice. Yeah. I guess it feels like Facebook hasn't really, they flirted with the Facebook Live audio. Did that go away? What? I haven't seen that in a while.
That's a good question. You know what? I remember reading like, hey, this is coming. And then I don't remember, but people diving in and using it. And again, I think that's maybe because there's a screen component to it. And I think what I'm thinking is the question is that I look at what Google, Apple, and Amazon are doing, and they're trying to go to this screenless type of system. Mm-hmm. And so, which I wonder, does Facebook see that as an avenue by which they're going to go down that road at some point? And what I'm trying to look at it, and when I say that is part of it is I'm looking at my own family's personal daily digital habits. Like my 6-year-old gets up in the morning. The first thing he does, he runs over to the Echo and asks what the weather is, because he wants to know if he can wear shorts to school. I mean, so he's got that ingrained in his mind. I go ask the Echo. Yeah. He asks the Echo questions all the time. So I'm kind of going, is there an opportunity there for Facebook to kind of build that type of thing that could – and I don't know what that would look like with your friends and all that kind of
they're
stuff.
They're listening to us already, aren't they?
Yeah, I'm sure they are. So, I mean, I think there's a real opportunity to do something there. And so I'm just, you know, maybe they've got something down the road that we don't know about. Maybe they're like, forget that. We're in VR, AR. We want to be there. I don't know. But I was again, kind of just surprised. And by the way, part of that was also, as I do more listening sessions with our church members and figuring out what tools are using, the Echo to me continues to rise on that list. So I'm thinking, how can we utilize that for our church?
That's interesting. And Ryan, I want to know your thoughts on that. Daryl, you said two things that I thought were really sort of actionable for a lot of churches. One is you're paying attention to what younger people do, your kids, and you're having listening sessions with your congregation to just ask them where they're spending their time. Is there a way, are there tips like that, Ryan, that you would advise churches to like be able to prioritize different sort of platforms or mediums by listening first? Is that part of what you would advise a church to do?
Yeah, I think absolutely. And I think just being aware of where social is headed. I think if you're not paying attention and if you're still putting out announcements on your social media platforms, like that's all your social is, hey, here's a picture of our upcoming Friday event. Hey, here's a big announcement for our Saturday event, so on and so forth. You're missing the whole shift where social is headed. If you're not getting on this little camera right here and you're doing more relational video chats, more conversation-based social media, video-based, group-based, conversation-based, you're missing the whole wave of where this is all going. So I think gone are the days that you just post a graphic and that is a church's social media strategy. Or, hey, we have our content calendar. You know, Mark didn't come out and say, hey, we're going to give all the millennials a content calendar, what to do. They're going to say, no, we're going to give you chat tools on Instagram, right? So that's the whole shift. And if the church isn't paying attention, we're still stuck in the old school way of doing this because it's easier to do one to many blasts as opposed to many conversations and relationship development. So I think that's the big shift. And I think where the question for Facebook is I feel like they finally got a whole bunch of clarity around we're all going to be about personal, meaningful relationships. That's what our platform's going to do. So you saw them release like the dating platform in that wave there, because I think it matched that's the direction that they're headed. I think what you're hopefully going to see them is actually not go certain places if it doesn't fall into personal, meaningful community relationships. They're going to say, we could go that way, but we're going to steer everything this way. So my guess is you're actually going to see them pull away from technology that's not in that category, would be my guess of where I think they're headed.
Well, and I think, Ryan, you're bringing up a good point, because I think if we were to look at take Gen Y out of the millennials out of the equation for a second and go to the generation that's coming after them, Gen Z. We noticed the one thing about them is they are not a one-to-many type of broadcasting tool. They are a one-to-one. That's why they like Snapchat, because it's a one-to-one. So with the dating, is that their play into all of a sudden we're going to help you better connect and build better one-on-one relationships because we see down the line this is where people are going, which goes back to your point again about broadcasting just random content out there. I say random content, you know, your announcements, whatever, that are we going to have to get to the point to where I'm going to have to look at you, the user, like I'm building a personal relationship with you to where it is it's a one-to-one. I mean, we all like to think we're doing that, but are we going to get like hyper niche based in regards to that? So the fact that when I'm marketing to Ryan, the stuff I'm giving Ryan is really just for Ryan and Ryan really feels like it's just for him. I just see that when I deal with going back to that listening session thing for a second, you know, my wife's a student minister. So one of the things when we have students at our house, I'll just say, hey, I'm a 40-year-old guy. Let me ask you, what do you use? Instagram, Snapchat? And they're all like, here's the deal. We use Snapchat because our parents know we're on Snapchat, but I'm hiding my Instagram account. I'm like, okay. And so why? Well, because it's that one-to-one. So I think there may be something down the future, down the road. Maybe the dating app is one way they may get into that avenue.
I think what's so fascinating about Facebook and the reason we're spending so much time dissecting all the different opportunities is that it really does have an impact on like church strategy. And I'm just thinking about the old school way of thinking about Facebook is you're broadcasting posts. Like that's like original what you do on Facebook from years ago is you just broadcast these posts and people will see them. But shifting into meaningful social interactions, and you know, I think another thing Zuckerberg said is helping anyone share anything from anywhere to anyone. It's like, is there a way to help lead pastors? I feel like is probably the person that might struggle with this, or whoever the oldest person is on your elder board or whatever. Is there a way to help them wrap their minds around the way that Facebook is not a pulpit, but an ecosystem to empower meaningful interactions within your congregation? Like, is there a way to do that? Ryan, what do you think about that?
I think that's what we all probably have felt, that tension, you know, for as long as we've been doing this. But I do think it's important that if we can communicate that social is not people's stage anymore. It's not your stage. It's not your pulpit. It's a coffee table. So if you were going to go into a coffee shop, sit down with somebody and have a conversation, that's social media. So if you can see social in your mind as a coffee table, not your platform, like that is a huge shift where you can be like, okay, I treat that a whole lot different. Let me pull in where this can have a practical strategy implication. People are always asking, should I be scheduling content, or what scheduling tool? What do you use to schedule? What do you use to schedule? And here's the danger is if you're using scheduling tools just to blast out content at a specific time, then again, you've missed the whole coffee table analogy. Now, if you're using scheduling to say, hey, let's meet at a coffee shop at 11 a.m. and I'm going to be there and we're going to have a conversation, now that scheduling can help you. But again, I feel like the church looks at it as just this blasting one way, and we miss the whole mentality that this is a conversation, this is relationship, this is personal connection, meaning if somebody's commenting on a social post, that's a conversation starter and an opportunity to develop relationships. So maybe that helps is just shifting away from the stage and more this is a coffee table for relationship.
For sure. I love it. Let me run through a quick, and if anybody's joining, we've been doing this literally for hours now, I'm going to run through some of the stuff they sort of announced or leaked. I mean, some of this was out there, but they spent a lot of time talking about keeping everybody safe and then doubling down on, we want to help people connect. They announced Watch Party, some new tools for groups. Groups are obviously, you guys have a vested interest in groups, but groups are a huge deal. That there's the Facebook Marketplace. 1 in 3 people, I guess, use Facebook Marketplace. Video chat now and Instagram. Instagram having a camera effect like they do on Facebook. Stories are going to outpace the way we consume Facebook with the news feed in the next year. And then a bunch of VR stuff. The Oculus Go is shipping. 80% of people on Messenger, 80% of their messages go to 5 people. And then in the news feed, that they're prioritizing for friends first for those meaningful social interactions. And then for publishers that are trusted, informative, local, and inspiring conversations. And they may even throw out, they might do old school upvoting and downvoting to help people know what's valuable. Like, of all the sort of information they put out there, what to you is like one or two of the biggest things that you're the most excited about? Brian. Besides dating.
I found my wife, so I'm good there.
I was thinking that too. I was like, wow, this is really cool. I was like, I'm married, none of this, I'll never use this. But I was like, at least it's not skeezy, you know.
My thought was, hey guys, we didn't do a great job protecting your data, so we're gonna solve that by doing a dating app.
I know.
Really, guys?
Oh, that's awesome. For me, I don't know if there was anything that really got me super pumped about it, but just a reminder that, and maybe this was my analogy going on in my brain. When Mark comes out and says, Facebook is to help people connect in meaningful ways, develop relationships, build communities that really make a difference in life, I can't help but think to myself, isn't that what the church was designed for originally? So part of me says, like, I feel like our culture and our society and our world is craving the thing that God made the church to fulfill. And if we're not careful, Facebook is stepping up and actually fulfilling that vision and that mission. So on one hand, I'm like, oh, that's kind of crazy. I feel like the church should be in that void, not social media. And I feel like anyway, there's a lot there. But I also feel like since Facebook, that mission and vision is so closely aligned, I think it is worthwhile. I think that should be something that cues in pastors and church leaders to say, hey, I think this is a tool that is really in alignment with the same and very similar things that we're trying to do. How can we use this to really do that to a greater scale? And in that, I would say, if you're developing a strategy or content, look at that content or that post or that strategy and ask yourself, is this going to help people connect in meaningful ways? If it does, great, hit publish. If it doesn't, hit stop, time out. We got to go back to the drawing board and redo our strategy, because if you're just creating noise, Facebook is turning you off, essentially. So that would be the things that stood out to me.
What about you, Daryl? Anything that was sort of getting you jazzed?
I would say I had a little bit of caution on some things, and then I was excited to see them extend some stuff. The caution I would say was that He started off the talk a little bit with a little bit of that Silicon Valley ego in terms of like, we're going to save relationships. Like, I mean, he literally said, we're the ones that are going to do it. I'm like, nah, I think we're good, dude. But I hear what he was trying to say, but it was a little bit like, okay, again, there's a little bit of that mentality. I think sometimes we as a church can look at Facebook like it's going to be that thing that's going to help us do that. And so I think I want to provide a little bit of caution on that. On the flip side, I did see, again, going back to the theme, to me, it was more like enhancements on the group stuff, like you being able to integrate more of that group stuff in terms of putting a group button in certain places, having the group tab. One of the things that we're looking at for us is that we're a multi-campus church. So we're starting another campus. And so typically, you know, we got to build a campus website, we got to do this. Our question starting out with, what Facebook groups are we going to launch in that area first? And by the way, not ones based around our church, but based around affinity groups in that community. So the community is called Nolansville. So one of the things we're going to do is say, can we launch a Nolansville Moms Facebook group? The sole purpose of that group is not to pump our content into that group. It's to get to know the community. And then, oh, by the way, we've got some free resources. We're going to give you the happy from our church. You can take them. It doesn't matter. But the idea is to start fostering those communities that help us build relationships, that also get us in touch with how our communities are being formed. Because as you guys know, people are willing to give up a lot of free information on Facebook about what's going on. So to me, to see them continue that narrative that they started about groups was really encouraging. You brought up something in regards to pastors. And I think Neil's talked about, you know, trying to convince pastors and that kind of stuff. I would challenge you, if you're if you're trying to convince your pastor or your staff about this, is to go back and find Zuckerberg's talk that he gave, I don't know, 6-8 months ago in Chicago, to when he brought in all of those Facebook groups, like the top 800 Facebook groups. Watch mm-hmm. that talk, and I want you to imagine that's a pastor talking to small group leaders. And you frame mm-hmm. that talk like that, you will eventually, you'll get Facebook real quick. You'll go, oh, and then you'll frame it really quickly about how it's going to apply to your church. So to me, the group stuff, because obviously I run a group like you guys, mm-hmm. But also we are investing our church heavily into groups. That to me was really encouraging.
Yep. Yeah, for sure. We're coming up on the end of this segment. I want to pose, like I did to everybody, give you guys kind of the platform here to say whatever you want. But I also want, because you have these big Facebook groups, I want to know what the most frequently asked question in your groups are that you are like, please, somebody figure out how to answer this once and for all. But in addition to that, tell me what whatever you want everybody to know.
Yeah, I think that question, I think that always surfaces right now for us is where, you know, is it WordPress? Is it Squarespace? Is it something else? Like that platform discussion is always coming back around time and time again. And I don't know if we've ever found the answer for it. So we're always having fun with that in the church marketers group. But I think for me, one of the big takeaways I want to encourage pastors and church leaders to think about when it comes to your approach on Facebook is this. If you want to go big, because we hear these numbers like thrown around, like billions of people, billions with a B, I want you to come back and think small in order to go big. So sometimes you're thinking, man, when I go on Facebook, or I'm going to do a Facebook Live, or we're going to start a group, it has to be thousands and thousands of people, or I'm going to publish to the masses, like billions of people are going to come, you know, watch me or watch our church. And I want you to say, again, time out. Let's actually think small. What is one of the major needs in your community that is right around your church? And what is maybe one of the major strengths that God has gifted your church with, like a small thing, that you could start a Facebook group and be the solution to that need and bring God's love and hope and passion and power into that community and start small and start solving problems in a big way, but in a small way in your community. And I'm telling you, if you think small on social and start small and start kind of not being worried about talking to billions, but how can you talk to 1 to 2 to 3 to 4 to maybe 10 people and help God infiltrate their life, then I think that's where like the huge power is to actually going big. So sometimes I feel like we can get overwhelmed because we're thinking about the masses. And I want to bring you back to find a big need in your community, start small, and then you'll see God continue to grow that as you bring people's life, to God, and you just see that transformation. So that would be my kind of closing thoughts.
That is great. And like Holly said, great stuff. Love your passion. If you could make a little mini messenger bot of yourself giving me that pep talk every day, that would be great. All right, Daryl, what is, I really want to know what the question is that you guys get all the time that you're like, please someone make the official, the ultimate guide to answering this question and whatever else you want to say.
Oh my gosh. I would tell you, there's a lot of things. The number one question we get is this graphic any good? Or do you know what font this is? which we're all like, let me say this. I will tell you what I wish we actually had more in groups in general. And I wish, you know, Facebook has done a great job of, we joke about taking and stealing Snapchat stuff and putting it in Instagram. And they've even admitted like, hey, we're just doing that. I would love it if they actually stole a lot of stuff from Reddit. Reddit actually has more active users than Twitter. Most people don't know that. And Reddit actually does a great job of doing community, but also categorizing community and then turn around and inside those communities, like creating subcategories by which you can easily find information. I think, or like a group like me would love it if I was able to easily more categorize information, just more than just hashtags, and provide that almost resources. I mean, I'm looking, we've got a files tab and that kind of stuff, but if they could get more granular in that, to me, that would save heartache in terms of a group. Because again, I joke, it's, but really the questions are like, how do I do a Facebook ad? You know, all of those base level questions. Or, you know, the other one we get a lot is, what time of the day do you post on social media? Which were then, you know, every expert comes in and gives their thing. So I would say, I would love if they steal stuff from Reddit and help us better categorize our information, because I think Reddit does a really good job in regards to that.
Mm, yeah. Very good. And you really pulled your internet nerd card out with talking about Reddit. But I actually agree with you. I sort of took a month off of Facebook and was in Reddit more. And I was like, they got some things going on there for sure. Okay, guys, we're wrapping up this segment. I'm humbled to have shared the triangle here with the two of you. And again, y'all should join their Facebook groups if you're not in them already. But believe it or not, we are pressing on. We have one more segment. So thanks, Ryan and Daryl. Thanks for being here. See you guys.
See ya.
All right. We are not to the end of this broadcast. I'm going to bring this first guy here. This is the last segment, though, if you're watching. And like me, you have to use the restroom. But the first guy I bring here, Jason Kasten. He right now is doing digital marketing at Daystar. What's up, Jason? How you doing?
Hey, what's going on?
Tell me what your initial thoughts were of Zuckerberg's talk. Any big things for you?
I mean, I've been watching the broadcast, as you know, you've been speaking with a lot of my friends and colleagues here. So I saw a lot of things they're talking about. The thing that really stood out to me that I saw the most, or really focused on the most, was one. Well, I'll just say Instagram, because I love Instagram. And the advancement there, but that VR piece, that Oculus Go, that stood out to me the most.
Yeah, I saw you yourself one in our little group message. Is I'm sure their order sales were ridiculous. Okay, let me bring in. We got this segment. We got one more person as well. Joanna Lai, Jason and I are in the DFW area. Joanna is in Silicon Valley. Are you there right now?
Are we?
Joanna does marketing for an app called the Abide app. It's a Christian meditation app. Joanna, in general, Facebook, when you're trying to get people into apps and you're, you know, it, like, how valuable is it in your sort of marketing suite? Is it still at the top of the ladder?
Yeah. Can you hear me? I just want to make sure that I'm coming in clear.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, great. Yeah, so as background, we are located in Silicon Valley in Menlo Park, actually 4 miles away from Facebook. Our team is several people who used to work at Google and just wanted to use our tech skills to build, you know, something for God's kingdom. And I would say, in terms of using Facebook for our marketing acquisition strategy, so I head up marketing there, and I'm responsible for downloads. And Facebook is one way to bring in downloads, and it really comes down to what's the cost per install and what's the CPI and the cost per acquisition. So I know a lot of people utilize Google Ads and Facebook Ads to bring in installs to their mobile app, or just even getting leads for, you know, churches or whatnot. So I would say it's one distribution channel out of the several that are out there, and it's just basically testing against different channels to see what's most effective.
Yeah, and I do have a specific question for you. Being in that community in Silicon Valley, and you used to work, like you said, at one of the other massive organizations there. You were working at Google. In general, what is it like to be a Christian at a big company like a Google or a Facebook?
Yeah, that's a really good question. For me, what I found most challenging was not placing my identity in being a Googler or being a Facebooker or whatever, because I think it's kind of a utopian society, and you can, like, you get a lot of social validation from being like, oh, you work at Google or you work at Facebook. And that was the most challenging thing. And also, I've always personally felt the tension between, like, business values and Christian values. And then also here in Silicon Valley, people, they, you know, you worship technology. Technology is God. But really, using technology as a means to bring people closer to God, but technology doesn't replace God. So I think it's a lot of probably more, you know, internal, like, self soul searching questions. But I found that one of the people on our staff, he actually works in Dallas, Drew, but he said, to take a stand for your faith in Silicon Valley, it kind of means more, or he was kind of more impressed because you're more of an anomaly. Like, oh, you're a Christian. Yeah. There's Christians out there. So, but, you know, like, anywhere, people are pretty open, and they accept, if you stand firm in what you believe, people
That is kind of interesting, because Jason and I are in the Dallas area, which is the Bible Belt. You're up in Silicon Valley, And it's almost like the inverse problem. Like in the Bible Belt, it's like trying to convince Christians and these big organizations that we work at to adopt technology. In Silicon Valley, mm-hmm. It's like the inverse. It's like, let's not idolize it. Jason, in your experience, and even before Daystar as well, like how are you framing technology and how you pitch it to leaders of Christian organizations, ministries, or churches?
One of the hardest things that I had to do is I had to use examples, traditionally Christian examples, but apply them in the tech framing. So, for example, if I'm saying, hey, you know, a good example would be, hey, we don't like iPads. We don't like the pastor preaching from iPads. You know, that's not the traditional Bible. And so then you have to look at the examples of, okay, well, why aren't you using scrolls? Why aren't you using parchments or old stone tablets? Yeah. You have to give them those types of examples to say, you guys are already using technology. It's just you think that it's supposed to be this certain way, and it's not. Not messing up the method, or not changing the message, but just evolving the method in which we're delivering it. And so I have to have like a lot of examples, and speaking to, you know, older leadership who are used to the technology of their day, and you know, telling them it's great that you did CDs and DVDs back in the day, and even cassette tapes, and I know you had the first 8-track, I understand that, but I'm talking about a little different technology these days. And so you have to just keep giving those examples to relate their experiences in today's framing.
Yeah, for sure. I do want to get both of y'all's opinions, because one of the things that they touched on that was sort of, it was mentioned multiple times, but it's the, is like using video chat in place of, as a way to connect. So like Instagram, they announced is going to have this video chat feature where it looked really slick. Like you can video chat with people while you're using Instagram. They've got Watch Party where you'll be able to have like a leader or whatever of the Watch Party in there talking with people. This sort of visual storytelling, they mentioned stories are going to outpace how we consume Facebook. It's going to outpace the news feed in the next year. Joanna, when you're just in general doing marketing or even, you know, looking, or if you were to talk to a pastor, like how would you advise them to dip their toes into like the visual social media space? Like what would be a first step that you'd say, hey, here's something you can try?
Well, to your point, I think video is a really good idea, because people, they don't like reading anymore. That's just like commonly known, that videos are a lot more engaging, and YouTube is, aside from Google, it's the most searched platform that people. What I would just advise any pastor or anyone is just to start, because sometimes you can get really caught up. Things need to look perfect. You know, I need to have the right image. I need strategy and everything. But, you know, working at a startup and my Abide, it's, you know, 5 or 6 people. I'm like one of the only marketing people, and I contract out a lot of work. But it's important just to test the waters and start and not get so caught up and everything needs to be perfect. And what I would really advise is just testing and A/B testing and seeing, is it worth it? Like, what's your return on investment here? And like, if, you know, like trying the different platforms like Facebook, Instagram, if you want to do social, and where are you getting the most returns? How do you define success? And being very metrics driven. I think that's one thing that being in Silicon Valley has really taught me, is, you know, you have to define your metrics, and you know, you have to know results and what you're measuring. And just even like launch a very small campaign, such as, oh, I'm going to post on these 3 different platforms. I'm going to see what the engagement rate is, and I'm going to see which one brings in the leads. Like, what's the ultimate goal? And reevaluate it, but start, and like don't be afraid to fail, because I fail all the time. But just don't get so caught up about things.
For sure, Jason, is that sort of how you would pitch it? How would, you know, if you're a consultant with a church, like how are you encouraging them when maybe they don't have the skill set, they don't have the experience, they're not a teenager? How are you getting them to use these platforms and sort of embrace the opportunity?
Well, it's kind of 2 different ways I've went about it. Actually, when I was working on staff at the Potter's House, you know, that's a large ministry, and we didn't have buy-in for social media. Like, they had the way they did ministry, and they were very successful at it. So the way we got them to understand and do social media, and I'm talking about back starting, I was there from 2010 to 15. So back in 10, 11, and 12, we didn't tell leadership we were doing social media. We just went and did it. So we built out these Facebook pages and we built out these Twitter pages at the time, and they grew to the point where when we presented them to leadership, we said, hey, here's another platform that we're utilizing, that the ministry is utilizing, that you guys, the leadership, didn't understand yet, but we already have a lot of followers here. So here's something that you guys can utilize as well. So in that aspect, you know, we just went and did it, you know, similar to, you know, what stated before. As far as asking, you know, smaller churches and how they can utilize this without having, you know, the financial resources, the personnel resources and stuff like that, is again, just start small and pick a platform. Well, start from the pulpit. Ask your audience, you know, in your weekly services, what platforms are they already utilizing? If it's Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, start with that particular platform that your audience is already utilizing, and then meet them there and then grow from there. But trying to jump on and seeing that, you know, Facebook announced all of its platforms today, and Twitter's growing by leaps and bounds and all this type of stuff, and then try and jump on everything, that's a fool's errand. That's just throwing stuff at the wall and hoping it sticks, and nothing sticks, and the wall just gets dirty.
Yeah.
I have two more thoughts. Sorry, is that okay?
Yeah, go ahead.
To his point, so one is just, you know, starting small is even so a lot of churches, they might be resource constrained, but use what resources are available, and you can outsource a lot of work. So that's something I've also learned to do, is like, even if you're not the social media expert, there is a teenager or a college student in Iowa that it like loves posting images and loves engaging with people. So find a way that's smart to go about doing it. And secondly, if I was like approaching leadership and saying, oh, this is why you should use technology, I would be sure to sell it from their perspective and know, like, just know their pain points and what they care about. Do they care about, I know I'm coming from the business end, but do they care about like tithing, or do they care about church attendance, or do they care about, you know, communities? And just being able to tie the technology to giving them the results and like using use cases for that. So yeah, I know that's more like the ministry end, but I'm just like telling it like,
no,
it is.
I think that's important to talk about, because a lot of times, at least in my experience with framing up Facebook for churches, is like, you have to say, or like Facebook ads, for example, Facebook ads are built for businesses like to make money. And a lot of these tools, even the way, you know, the descriptions of the little tools has to do with monetizing, that sort of thing. It's like they built this stuff for that purpose, but we can still use it just to connect or to have engagement, meaningful engagement. And also, I think it's great with in the online space with a lead pastor, is like some of these metrics that Facebook or like Google Analytics or whatever has, it's like, you know, do you know how many people are engaged while you're preaching for an hour? Like we can put a number on it. You know, we can put a number on how many people watched for 20 minutes or 30 minutes. Do you know who's taking notes while you're preaching? Like some of the things that the digital world opens up are like, they're just not available in quote unquote the offline or the real world. But let me dive back into some of these updates. So Facebook dating is a big thing. We've talked about it a couple of times. I'm curious on y'all's take as well. It's interesting. It was the one thing they really like detailed how it works, which I thought was interesting. But basically how it works is it's a completely separate experience. Opt-in only. None of the interaction that happens within Facebook dating is in the news feed. But it is fascinating to me, and we brainstormed a couple different ideas on how Facebook dating will end up in, you know, churches or singles ministries. Jason, was there anything that was stuck out to you about the dating platform aspect?
Well, yeah, it was a couple of things. One, the stat was 1 in 3 marriages starts online. And so in America today, and I happen to have one of those 3 marriages because I met my wife online. So that whole
piece, oh, no way,
was interesting to me, because I'm listening to what they're saying and I'm like, okay, I remember meeting my wife online and when her roommate wouldn't let me in because I was the crazy guy from the internet and all that type of stuff. So listening to the way they framed it today and how normalized it is, when, you know, I thought I was a pretty normal guy, but according to her, I was an internet crazy dude. It's like them creating the profiles and normalizing the dating process and putting it in a place where everybody already is. was an interesting dynamic. Now, framing that in the evidence of where they're talking about privacy and the issues they're having with privacy, so you release a dating platform, that's an interesting dynamic. So
It was definitely a curveball after all the data privacy and keeping people safe thing to throw out that we've created a dating platform. And so, Joanna, I'm putting you on the spot as the female here. They spent a lot of time detailing basically how it's a safe place, like the messaging aspect is text only. Are in light of all the recent, you know, stuff about Facebook and data and all this sort of thing, are you at a point where you feel safe giving Facebook, letting that be a part of your dating experience? Is that like, are women going to trust that?
You know, I think it depends geographically where you are. Because I mean, to even taking things away from dating, just in Silicon Valley, I've noticed that people aren't really making a big deal of the data breach situation, or it's not as much of big news because it's almost not kind of expected, but we're like, yeah, like Facebook, they are, like they've created this platform so they can get data. And we just know that. Yeah. I think on the one hand though, it just depends on where you are personally on, you know, privacy levels and things like that. But I know people who are just willing to try all the different dating apps. And there's clearly a demand there because, you know, most people are meeting online. And so Facebook, they're just plugging into that need right there. Security wise, I mean, a lot of the dating apps already, you have to log in through Facebook.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I don't see a resistance to that. I don't know. But I don't want to speak for the entire female population here.
Yeah, no, you don't have to, but I am curious. You mentioned Silicon Valley and like the sentiment there might be different than the sentiment it is other places. What is it true that in Silicon Valley, when Mark Zuckerberg had to testify in front of Congress, it was almost like it was a de facto, like I'm representing all of tech, all of the tech world here. And I'm going to, you know, make our case, like it was broader than Facebook. Did you interpret it that way, or any of your old Google friends interpret it that way?
I mean, some people did interpret it that way. I think people in Silicon Valley tend to be pretty, you know, more on the liberal side of things. So I don't know. We probably had other commentary aside from, you know, him representing all of, you know, the technology world, to be quite frank. Yeah. But I think a lot of the commentary here was how outdated things might seem in, you know, DC and just their awareness of technology and how it works. That's I think, honestly, what was the commentary around my social circles.
Yeah. Jason, what from all the stuff they mentioned, what's got you the most jazzed? You mentioned Oculus Go. Is that like a hobby territory, or like you're like investigating it for, you know, more use than just cool stuff? Like what are you most excited about based on stuff they mentioned?
So with Oculus Go, originally I thought about it just to play VR games. I'm very interested in that off of, you know, just going back to the holodeck on Star Trek: The Next Generation. But I actually have clients and even with Daystar, we're looking at building virtual experiences for, you know, faith-based virtual experiences, whether I think there's a church that I'm working with now that wants to build a virtual experience of, you know, actual church-based virtual experience, a virtual experience of their church campus, and even a virtual experience of trips to Israel. So stuff like that, that the church does in the offline space, they want to do in the virtual space. And so we're looking at how to build that. And a lot of times in the conversation, when I brought that stuff up, like this is the next thing that's coming, this is cutting edge, you guys want it, that's fine. But we had to look at what type of device would be mass adoption, something that, you know, doesn't have to be tethered to a computer and something that might have more computing power than say like a Google Cardboard or just putting your phone in some type of device. And so this was the first time that they saw something because of Facebook's brand recognition that they were like, okay, we kind of see where that device could go. Let's see what we can possibly build with that. So that's why I was waiting to see what Oculus Go is going to look like and then to build for it.
Yeah, for sure. Joanna, I'm curious about, so there's like a lot of information, and like we mentioned previously, FA, it's actually a two-day thing. Like they've got sessions going on all the time. I wonder sometimes in Silicon Valley, like you sort of have this sort of inherent knowledge of the tech world, of the digital space. If you're talking to a pastor or a church leader or a ministry leader who's like, you know, gleefully ignorant of the internet world, where would you advise that they like pay attention to stay abreast of like what's going on, you know, because there's so much. There's VR, there's Messenger, WhatsApp, there's all this stuff. Like where should the average person go to stay informed?
Oh, that's a really good question. I don't know. I'm curious. What do people outside of Silicon Valley, where do you guys go? What platforms do you go? Because, I mean, I could give you the average, like, oh, you should go to, like, Twitter or, you know, Facebook or just setting up these news, you know, set up a customized news feed for yourself. But a lot of things, you know, it might be fake news or things like that. Yeah. But I think it's just whatever platform works for you. Because that's something actually that most of us talk about, though, is fake news, because there's so much information out there. And how do you weed through that? So I would just probably choose a reputable news source and get it from there. Yeah, probably unbiased. Mm-hmm.
For sure. Let me reiterate for Jerome, who just joined. Jason Kasten here is on the bottom. He does digital marketing. Or used to be at the Potter's House, has a lot of experience with churches. Joanna Lai is at the top left. She does marketing for the Abide app, which is a Christian meditation app. But I want to, you know, talking about social media, Facebook is sort of like the OG of social media, I guess, or maybe Twitter is, but what, you know, if social media is getting people's attention and whatever your mission is, like it's tools where we can have people's attention. How do you or churches or whatever your organization is, or if it's a Christian meditation app, how do you get people's attention now? How do you effectively cut through all the noise? Because there's so much activity. How do you effectively get someone's attention? Jason, do you have any brilliant tidbits for the folks at home?
I mean, as far as like when we look at social strategies, well, jumping back to the question, that's getting their attention is definitely interesting in that there's a variety of ways to do it. You know, we always talk about meeting people where they're at. Well, that particular point of where they're at is really the question in itself. So, for example, for me, looking at my faith-based walk in general, I didn't grow up in a church. So the way that we got all my friends really got into church and got saved was an actual evangelist came to the basketball court we were playing at, and he met us there and talked to us there. You know, we had to stop the game, and didn't nobody want to stop. We didn't really care about the church thing. And he stopped and talked to us, and he actually came to us where we were at because we weren't going to the church. So in that particular example, the thing that I liked about the digital space was a lot of the content that we're developing, whether it's about, you know, problems, whether it's encouraging, whether it's inspirational, informational, you know, it's reaching people where they're at on these platforms, carrying around these devices that we all have with us. So that was the thing I really like about, you know, a lot of the stuff that Facebook was announcing is just another way to take the content and stay connected with the people that we want to, and reach people that we're trying to reach pretty much, you know, all around the globe.
Yeah, for sure. Joanna, what about you? In general, sort of a high level question, how do you get someone's attention today using social media? What's an effective way to do that?
So there are best marketing practices, but I do think in general, stories and just the power of testimony, word of mouth, like this worked for me, it can work for you too. Time and time again with the Bible, I found that has been effective, like benefits, like, you know, social proof, like, hey, if you use this, this will happen to you. You'll feel better. You know, you have to appeal to the emotion of where the user is at. And I know for and then there's also just like the Facebook algorithm and their likelihood of promoting certain things and how their algorithm is always changing for publishers. But I know, you know, there's a bigger push towards video. And, you know, if you do video, even if it's just raw video in-house, people like that because people like seeing an authentic experience. So Really, it's, you know, defining what your brand is and what makes you different and being able to sell that and bring out those that value proposition to the audience and being like, hey, this is how we can help you and how we can serve you. But people, they love testimonies. Like if it worked for someone else, it's just infomercials. It worked for them. It can work for you too. That's how it is. Yeah.
No, I love it. Back to the testimonies, and which is sort of a version of like word of mouth, but putting them on social media. That, you know, storytelling is inherently a part of all of this. As we come to the end of this segment here, I want to make sure you each have sort of your own little time in the spotlight here to talk to the pastor, the church leaders that are watching this. Jason, starting with you, like, just you have the floor here. What was the biggest, most exciting thing to you, or what would you tell any of these pastors watching this just about Facebook in general?
Well, one thing I noticed as far as with this whole thing and pastors looking at this and trying to figure out, you know, what all these things that Facebook launched and what they're trying to do. One of the key things is, one, you know, when you look at this, even though social media is very sexy, you got to think about this from a digital perspective. Social media is one of the platforms that you can utilize to reach people and stay connected with them and engage with them. Another key thing that I want you to look at and take away from this is kind of the lane I've been staying in with this whole session is about Oculus Go and VR. And one of the key things I'm seeing that, churches want to do is as we're trying to grasp and get a hold on all the platforms that we have today, keep in mind that technology is only speeding up. So as you grasp the things that we're utilizing now, understand that new things are coming. So just kind of be aware. I'm not saying you have to jump on every new platform that comes out, but do attempt to keep yourself aware that new things are coming. And as the platforms we utilize today, and mobile is very great and apps are great, VR is coming, AR is coming, I'm sorry, virtual reality is coming, augmented reality is coming, and all these new technologies are coming. So as you look to reach people right where they're at, these new platforms are giving you new opportunities and not just new ways to get frustrated because so many things are coming at you.
I love it. That's great. Joanna, we got pastors, church leaders watching this. Give us some Silicon Valley wisdom.
I think just to not be afraid to start and to, sorry, there's like a dog barking in the background. I'm in a coffee shop, that's startup life. But yeah, just to choose one platform and don't be afraid to start. And you might, you know, post something and not receive any feedback, and that's okay. I think just don't get too in your head about things need to be perfect, and put yourself out there and try one thing. And I think of technology not as a substitute, but a supplement to, ways to reach people and ways to connect with people, because technology in itself, sometimes people view it as, oh, this is really evil or it's depersonalizing everything, but you can use technology for good, and getting on that train can really help you build communities. And it's when you can do that, it's really exciting and powerful.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Thank you for that. Thanks to both of you for joining us. We'll say bye-bye to the folks at home. Thanks, Joanna and Jason. I'll talk to you next time. All right, everybody at home, we have come to the end of the broadcast. If any of you have watched this whole thing, please email me at chad@cboutreach.com. We hope it was insightful. There's some actionable tidbits. Everybody who talked on here is worth following on social media in their own right, or investigating whatever they've got going on, whatever groups or programs or whatever. So thank you to all of our panelists, and we'll see you next time.